Across the UK, online and on DAB. Access all radios.
Talk Radio. Give it some lip. Talk Radio.
Good evening, dear listener. This is Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio. Busy start to the show this evening. It's Film Ring. Have you all done your homework? Have you all watched The Imposter? Because we're going to be talking about it now. There will be spoilers, guys. If you haven't seen it, we're going to be discussing all the twists and the turns. We're going to speak to Charlie Parker as well, the private investigator. You can join in 0844 499 1000. This is Talk Radio. Here's the news.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I'm a little busybody, though I know it's very shoddy. I insist on knowing what is going on with everybody, cause I'm such a busybody, always prying, always spying. I'm defying anyone to try to hide the facts from me. Now Mrs. Jones is with the doctor and her pulse is finally clocked, as suddenly she sees me peeking into all her friends. I'm shrieking, Mrs. Jones's valve is leaking, a mechanic she is seeking, cause her clutch needs overhauling and her motor's always stalling. Mrs. Jones, you lonesome gal, you finally lost your trade in value. Now we come to Mr. Clunky, thinks that I'm a little punk. He's always keeping up with Jones, and while I tap his telephone, I learned that they will disconnect him soon. The bill they don't collect, the sheriff's gonna take it back, his brand new shiny Cadillac. So now I pass the news around that Mr. Clunk is bankrupt bound. I'm ruining his credit, and I know he won't forget it, though he thought I was a little punk, a cabbage headed Mr. Clunk. I got the bank to fume and fret. They took his home, and better yet, they grabbed his television set, because I'm such a busybody. Busybody, if you drink an extra toddy, I will spot it long before you bought it. I'll be pointing to your house and telling folks that you're a souse, though I admit I am a louse. It's so much fun to tell the neighbors that you're underneath the weather, and they ought to get together using you as an example to the kids of what a tramp will do if he is off the wagon. Now your reputation's dragging, cause you took an extra toddy, and I'm telling everybody that you're more than slightly dizzy. Now I've got you in the tizzy, cause I'm such a very busy little busybody. I'm the death of every party. You should hear the things I say when truth and consequence we played. I state the age of Mrs. Dunn. I tell him she is 61 and that her face is lifted and her cargo slightly shifted. There are couples kissing in the dark. I use my flashlight for a lark, and Joan is hugging Mortimer and she's engaged to Mr. Shore. I'm hiding in the cuspidor and flash a light upon their face while they are locked in fond embrace, and Mr. Shore then wrecks the place. I'm such a busybody, breaking up a lovely party. Mabel Smith is on the scale and suddenly she's growing pale, for in a chorus so endearing I have got the neighbors cheering. Darling, what a lovely weight, you weigh 188. You lick the pattern off the plate and then you bleed for more to eat. You look just like a strange balloon that drifted to us from the moon, and scientists must watch their step and see if you're a secret weapon. That is how the gossip goes, and all because I stick my nose in other people's dirty clothes. A heavy-winded guy am, I don't need a breath to say goodbye, because I'm such a busy little busybody. Busy booty bee. I'm a little busy body.
You tell me another radio show that's starting with Jerry Lewis. You tell me another radio show that's starting with Jerry Lewis, and I will pinch you in the nose. Good evening, dear listener. This is Ian Lee. It's Monday night. It's Talk Radio. It is Film Ring. Have you all done your homework? There was homework that we set last week. The homework was, and I know lots of you have, was to watch a film called The Imposteur. The Imposteur, not The Impostor. The two different films, OK? Now, The Imposteur was recommended by a caller. I can't remember who. I apologise. And it is absolutely nuts, right? That briefly, 0844 499 1000, open season, you can call in. Your thoughts, your theories, you can tell me you hated it, you can tell me why you liked it. Right. The basic premise is, in the 90s, a 14-year-old boy goes missing in America. And obviously his family are devastated and they're looking for him. Several years later, a French man, a grown man in Spain, turns up at an orphanage, a children's home in Spain, claiming to be a child. And through... well, through ingenuity on his part and slackness on the part of the authorities in Spain, He manages to find out that he thinks he looks a little bit like this American kid that went missing 3 or 4 years before. So he pretends to be Nicholas Barkley, the boy that went missing. And everybody buys the story. And eventually the family, very excited that their son, their brother, has turned up in Spain. The sister flies over to Spain to see what she thinks is their brother. He obviously isn't. And she looks at him and goes, "Oh, it's so good to see you, Nicholas. We've missed you so much." And then unfolds one of the weirdest, incredible stories I have ever heard in my life. 08444991000. I'd love to hear your theories on it. He goes home, he meets the family, and they all, you know, are happy to see their long-lost son stroke brother again. Frederick Bourdin is the name of the gentleman. Gentleman, there's a misuse of the term, if ever there was one. That is the chap pretending to be the child. Nicholas Barkley is the name of the child that has never turned up. And one of the great characters in this film is, if you've seen it, and I know lots of you have, is the private investigator. The police and the FBI and all of that, they seem a little bit useless. But there's a private investigator in the film called Charlie Parker who smells a rat. And I'm absolutely thrilled to say we've got Charlie on the phone now. Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening.
How are you, sir? It's nice to have you on board. This is an incredible story. I've got the summary about right, haven't I?
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm.
When did
you... Go ahead.
Sorry, Charlie, say that again. There's a slight delay on the line.
He had a lot of things in his favor. He was small in stature. He had no facial hair. Very little body hair. He looked the part of a teenage boy. He actually did look the part.
How old? He was in his early 20s, wasn't he?
Yes, he was in his early 20s, 23.
Right.
But he did look the part. It was easy for him over the years to fool a lot of people that way. But he used other tricks to fool them, too. In fairness to the family, we uncovered an 89-minute phone call between he and the grandmother. And he pumped the grandmother for information, like what was the name of the dog, what was the name of our cat. And we learned that later, but we didn't know it then. And then he would feed that information back to the family, like whatever happened to our cat, Smokey. Or whatever happened to the dog, and he knew the names, see? So he was able to bring up names of neighbors. He's a very skilled individual in deception.
He is, whatever anyone may think of what he did and his general attitude, he's very, very clever, isn't he?
Absolutely. He fooled, he's taken over 500 identities, and he's fooled many, many people. He had the jawline of the real Nicholas Barclay. He had the nose of one of the grandfathers. And when we, under the Freedom of Information Act, we are able to pull FBI records in our country. We pull those records, and the FBI actually thought he was the real Nicholas Barclay. They took his photograph to a forensic artist. The forensic artist looked at the jawline and said, "That's him. He's the real Nicholas Barclay." And that's when they put heat on me to get off the case. And I had already done the ear thing, and I knew it wasn't him.
Well, we'll go back to the ear thing in a minute, because that's a brilliant deduction and bit of detection work that you do. What was the gap, Charlie, between the real Nicholas Barclay disappearing and Frederick Bourdin pretending to be him? How many years had it been?
It was 3 years. And when Barclay came back, and I know what you're thinking. I know everyone out there is thinking that I know my child.
Yeah.
And I'm positive that I could recognize him. But some of the things he did that that we found out, he endeared himself to that family right from the start. I have worked with missing people all of my life, and I know that there are some cases where I could take a missing person and it not be the real person and put it back in the family, and they would accept him because they had lost the one they loved. They would accept he or she. I mean, I've seen that actually happen. But in this particular case, there was an ulterior motive, you know. We didn't know that at the time. You know, no one suspected that at the time.
What you mentioned the ear thing, and I think this is absolutely brilliant. And so many people, so many of my listeners have mentioned this on Twitter. Explain how you became 100% sure that it wasn't Nicholas.
Well, I had seen, I'd read in a book about Scotland Yard that when they caught our famous, infamous murderer of Martin Luther King at Heathrow Airport, James Earl Ray, the killer of King, had cut his ears, trimmed them off the bottom to hide his identity. And Scotland Yard uses that, and I think has used it for years, the ears as an identifying factor.
Yeah.
So they were looking for that sort of thing at Heathrow Airport, and they spotted him that way. So I knew if I could get a picture of the ears, I knew that they were basically four different kinds of ears. And if his ears didn't match, he was not Nicholas Barclay. And we found that out almost instantly. You know, I asked the cameraman to zoom in close and get me a copy of the ears. When he got me that, I got back to my office and looked at it, and I knew right off the bat that he was not Nicholas Barclay. And I called Beverly and told her.
And Beverly was the mother, wasn't she?
Beverly was the mother, and I called Beverly and told her. I said, it's not him, Beverly. He's a fake. And apparently he was right there because Beverly couldn't talk, you know. And so I waited and called back, and she still couldn't talk. And then he called me and said, stay out of this. The FBI thinks I'm Nicholas Barclay. The Border Patrol thinks I'm Nicholas Barclay. Everybody does, but you, and you're nothing, you know. And I said, well, I don't know who you are, but if you bring harm to that family, I'll kill you myself. You know, I'll come and get you myself. It's an interesting thing to know that someone is not who they say they are, and everyone's believing that they are. I mean, it's a phenomenal feeling because you know in your heart that he is not that boy.
I've got shivers going down my spine as you're telling this story, Charlie. It's incredible.
It disrupted our family somewhat, too, because I was right in the middle of it. I couldn't get out. I had the FBI on me. I had, people just believed it was him. He's very, very persuasive.
And there were some real obvious things that were different between Bourdain and Barclay, but he was so good at manipulating, he could explain it. The colour of the eyes, for example, were different. He concocted a really intricate backstory as to where he'd been for those 3 years, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He said he had been in a sex slave camp, and that they had injected fluid in his eyes to change his eyes to brown. Immediately after he said that, I telephoned an ophthalmology school.
Yeah.
And I talked to a professor, and I said, is there any way you can change the color of a person's eyes? And he said, people that have glaucoma sometimes take shots that will make brown eyes browner or blue eyes bluer. But no one in the history of working with eyes has ever changed a brown eye to a blue eye or vice versa. You know, it just isn't done, and it's impossible. His accent, I called a language expert, a professor at Trinity University, and I asked him, I said, this boy is still speaking, still speaking with an accent. He still talks with an accent. And he's been free a pretty good while. And he said it's impossible. He said, actually, men that came out of the prisoner of war camps in Vietnam would sometimes bow and take on the gestures of the Asians and take a little bit of an accent, but they would lose it after a week or two.
Yeah.
And so we knew we had a phony, but no one knew what to do, you know. And we did everything we could.
What did you do, Charlie? Because if the FBI were saying, "Oh, please go away," we know this is the real Barclay case closed. Yeah. What did you do to be believed?
This is not in the movie, but I put an undercover in out there with him, pretending to be a reporter. And what I was interested in getting, the real Nicholas Barclay had a tattoo on his finger of it's called a Pachuco emblem. And that's a Mexican gang in
right.
San Antonio.
Yeah.
But he had left off some of the points on the cross. And we tried to get a picture of that. And I wanted to have this person who was very skilled undercover, you know, find out more and more information about him. And we were working in that direction, anything we could do to catch him. And in fairness, I thought he was a spy. You know, we didn't know the word terrorist back then. We didn't know what, you know, no one ever mentioned that word
yeah.
until after 9/11. And I called a Frenchman that I knew that had worked in their black ops, they call it, or their secret organizations. And he told me what he thought that Barclay was a French Moroccan terrorist. And he used the word terrorist.
Mm.
And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, he's probably there to blow something up." So I actually thought he was here as a spy. That's what I thought. And I didn't put the two and two together about the young boy till later on in the case. About the, you know, I knew he wasn't the missing Nicholas Barclay, but I focused on him more than I did the real Nicholas Barclay and trying to find out who the heck he was. And so I started following and finding out where he went.
When did the FBI come on side? When did they start to believe you?
The FBI started to believe me when they wanted to get blood samples just to be sure, and I wouldn't let it go. I went to the media. I had a friend here that is a newsman, and I said, "Look, I got a guy that I know is not who he says he is." And I said, "I need to give him a polygraph, but I need it to be public. I need you to help me." Well, it's $400 for the polygraph. So the news guy wouldn't come up with the $400. He came up with $200. So I'm out busting my butt trying to get $200 more. And we get the $400, and we go give him the polygraph. Well, you know what? He actually kind of passes it.
Yeah,
it comes back.
I thought he would.
You know, it comes back that they couldn't get a good reading because of him.
Because he's such a good liar. He's such a good liar.
Yeah,
he probably believed elements of his story.
He is. And he probably did believe it. But that's what I thought he was. And we stayed with the news media. And then the pressure of the news media put pressure on the FBI to try to get blood tests to keep it back going. And that's really what happened. I don't know what they would say to you today, but that is truly what happened. And they begin to – and see, Beverly would not take a blood test. She would not do that. And everybody started getting really suspicious. So that's when I started looking at the real Nicholas Barclay and going around to the neighbors and talking and finding out what he was really like and that there were problems inside the house, bad problems inside the house.
Charlie, we'll get on to the family in a second and some of the theories and stuff. He eventually confessed to you, didn't he?
Oh, he did. He did. And what happened? And I need to make sure. I'm sure he's listening to this, but I need to say a few things to him. He's not a monster, and I made that comment early on, and I know he has children. He served his time. He served 6 years, hard time. A lot of his time was spent in solitary confinement because he didn't get along with the other prisoners, and he served his time. So he's not a monster, but what he was caught up in the middle, and I think he was as frightened as I was. You know, I knew something was terribly wrong, and he was right in the middle of it. He was sleeping and eating dinner with him and talking to him, and he knew early on that, by God, they weren't accepting him. You know, they didn't really believe he was Nicholas Barclay. Mm. So he was in the middle of a buzzsaw. You know, in England, I don't know if you use that word, but it's like a buzzsaw is going around and you're fixing to get cut. You know, and he was frightened to death, and the pressure got to him, and he cut himself, and he ran away, you know. And he was put in an institution for a few days, and then they brought him back. Now, can you imagine when they brought him back and put him right back in that home where he knew that something bad was wrong? Mm. So he and I built up a relationship, and it's how we work. We work on a stalker. We build a relationship with that stalker to where we know everything about him, and he talks to us because he knows, he wants to know what we know, see? So Barclay was, Borgin was curious about what I was finding out anyway, but he had his own troubles, is what I'm trying to say, and I'll tell you this towards the end, but I had some real terrible moments about the case. After he was arrested, I went back to Beverly, and I said, Beverly, I'd like to see where he stayed and where he lived, and I would like to go through his things. And I do that in any kind of case I work after I've done something or solved it, and I go back and I try to learn more about the individual so I can put it to other new cases that come up. So I go into the house where he lived, into the room, and he slept on the floor. And I went into his closet, and there were two pair of blue jeans and two shirts and a pack on the floor. The FBI didn't take any of his stuff. And I remember opening up the pack and shaking out his belongings. And there was back then it was a music device, you know, a little thing that put earphones in, and they would play CDs. And he listened to Michael Jackson, and his Michael Jackson tapes were still there. And I looked at that, and I leaned back against the wall, and I slid down the wall, and adrenaline, you know, sometimes the case is over, it makes you cry, and I kind of broke a little bit. And I thought, Jesus Christ, what have I done? This guy may have really just been here to find a home. You know, he was as worse off as I was. And I know this is giving you an opinion that you probably didn't expect.
Yeah.
But he was in the middle of a dangerous situation, and I was in the middle of a dangerous situation. And so we had that likeness about us, and I began to feel sorry for him for what had happened, and I truly did. And all of my investigation, I followed him constantly. He never did anything wrong. He never stole any money. He never hurt anybody. He never went to a base and blew up anything, which I thought he would do.
Mm.
So he was in a world of hurt, just like me. We both had a lot of things in common. And I felt some empathy and some compassion for him at that time. Now, what he did was despicable, and it can't be undone. But he got inside that family. He knew they weren't really accepting him. It must have been a real challenge for him, Charlie, as an impersonator.
Charlie, I have to play some ads. Are you okay for another 10 minutes or so? Is that all right?
Sure.
I'm finding this absolutely fascinating, and you're giving us so much insight into the film and stuff that wasn't in the film, and it's just exciting speaking to a private investigator as well. Let's be honest, we don't get too many of them over here. Charlie, stay there. We'll come back to you in a second. Tris and Evan, I know you want to have a word as well. This is fantastic. I'm loving this. This is Talk Radio. Let's have some ads.
The Wild Man of Late Night Radio is back.
Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
We're talking The Imposter. I know lots and lots of you have watched it. If you haven't, you can still watch it and still enjoy it. It's on YouTube. You can get the DVD very, very cheaply. It's an amazing film about Frederick Bourdin, a French guy, French man, pretending to be an American child, young teenager, that had gone missing. We've got Charlie Parker on the line. Charlie, you still there?
Beautiful. Yes, sir.
We did ask Frederick to come on the show, and I have been speaking with Frederick via Twitter. And not anymore, okay, because he's blocked me. Frederick, first of all, he said no. Then he wanted 500 euros, and we don't, you know, we have a policy not to pay for guests. He ended it with calling me a parasite, who said, he's a brilliant turn of phrase, my word is as precious as a hair on a spoon, and he told me to get lost. I know some of the listeners have also, very politely, you know, mentioned that we're talking about the film tonight, and he has been very, very rude to them. So if, just suggesting to the listeners, don't bother him, don't get in touch with him, don't harass him or any of those things. That's not what this is about. Were you ever scared of him, Charlie?
I was in what I did in our country, as you're aware, I mean, you've seen all the violence. We are allowed to carry guns. And when I thought he was a terrorist,
yeah,
and that's what I thought he was, I carried a gun in a little ankle holster. And I showed it to him. I flashed it because I was wanted him to know if he tried to do anything to me, I had a weapon. And I let him see it when I raised my pants leg up and saw it. But he was wiry. I didn't know if he would be, you know, be able to use a knife or how he could how he could handle himself. But I never turned my back on him. And I, you know, you're brave one day and afraid the next. That's what life's really like. I consider to say I'm a big, bad, tough private investigator, but one day I'm brave, the next day I'm scared to death. So that's really how life is in this business.
Charlie, we have a couple of listeners who'd like to have a quick word. Let's put them through and see if this works. We're having a little bit of trouble with our phones. Tris, can you hear me?
Oh, I can, yeah.
Tris, you're through to Charlie Parker. It might be a little bit of crackle on the line, but what would you like to say?
Hi, Charlie. Obviously, you know, when you see the film, you only get a very, very small percentage of everything that happened. But what I came away thinking was with the family that I think they knew from day one that it wasn't him, but I wonder whether it was maybe just part of the grieving process, like something's better than nothing, and maybe they were just trying to, maybe it wasn't sinister, maybe it was just them trying to shoehorn the missing piece of their family back into their life. I don't know what you think about that.
I think at the airport, the scene at the airport, it's fairly obvious that they didn't, you know, and he covered his face a lot, and the eye contact between he and Beverly. But what happened? Beverly was a late night worker. She worked the night shift at a donut factory. She made donuts, okay, all night long, and she would come home and sleep during the day. I believe Nicholas Barclay was killed during the day by his brother, Jason. When we interviewed neighbors, we know that they fought constantly. I interviewed Jason over and over, and Jason committed suicide.
Jason, for those who don't know, was an older brother who... And he had issues... I don't know if he had the issues when Nicholas went missing, but he did later on have drug issues, didn't he? And he committed suicide.
He did. And that's interesting at a time, you know, when he committed suicide. But... what I did is really investigate the case and interviewed Jason himself. And you'll notice that Jason did not come to the airport. Now, that's his long-lost brother, and he did not come to the airport. So he knew it was not him. But I believe it happened in the daytime. We have records to prove that Jason never went to work that night. I don't believe Jason had ever killed before. So I still believe the body is close by. I don't think he would have the nerve to put it in the trunk of a car and drive it 20 miles.
There's also mention, Charlie, of Jason meeting Bourdain once and kind of saying to him, good luck, and then never meeting him again.
That's right. He never went back again. And Jason was kind of a, even though he was an addict, he had a dynamic personality, and he was very likable, and you could get along with him. And I could say things to him like, I think you killed your brother. And he would, in a kidding way, say, well, you're thinking wrong. But I laid my work out to him, you know. Now, what I did is I went to the motel where he committed suicide, and I took the photographs from the crime scene when they found his body, The police found his body, and I laid the photographs all around the motel room where they were in the beginning.
Mm.
I pretended I was in that motel room with Jason. Now, Jason was an addict, carried a guitar pick in his pocket to scoop the cocaine and heroin with. He was the type of person that would go on binges for drugs. But what a drug addict would have done had he gone into that motel room was take his drugs and put the largest portion of them up in a ventilator or hide them and take just enough to use. Then he would go back and get the other. It's just the nature of their business, okay? Jason didn't. He laid everything out on the sink. And I think he was there to die, to commit suicide. And he died from an overdose of heroin, and he's a very skilled heroin addict, taking it all of his life. And he would not have taken an overdose without it being on purpose.
Charlie, we'll carry on with that theory in a second. I just want to bring Evan into the conversation. Evan, you're through to Charlie Parker. What would you like to say?
Hi, Ian.
Hey, Evan.
Hi.
Hi, Kevin.
And by the way, before I go on my point, I was the person he suggested.
Oh, was it you that suggested the imposter? Oh, well, bless you, because you've given us, a pleasure is the wrong word, but you've certainly given us a lot to think about, Evan. Well, thank you very much indeed. Have you got a question for Charlie?
Yes, I do.
Go on.
Hi, Charlie. I was just wondering how you, discovered him by the ears and that.
How we did that? Well, we had heard about that before, as I said earlier, to where that Scotland Yard had done that. And so we used that technique on him and knew immediately that he wasn't the right person. Something fun for your listeners to do if they have iPhones is to go to a party and take pictures with their iPhones at people's ears. Lay the iPhones down and let them look at the ears and see how really different they are.
You know everyone's going to be doing that. We can make a fortune, Charlie, with an app.
I do. No, it will amaze you. It will amaze you what you'll see. And people have different ways. It's almost like fingerprints.
I'm the only one out of my wife and my two young children, Charlie. I'm the only one that's got earlobes. Everyone else has got a very curved ear, and I've got a little bit dangling down. The end of the film...
Yeah.
I mean, it's shot beautifully. It's a stunning film. At the end of the film, we see you in the back garden of what used to be Beverly and Nicholas's house. It isn't anymore.
Right.
Digging a big hole. Did you find anything?
We did not find him, but there are two other places in that yard that I want to dig. But that was all real, what you saw there.
Yeah.
That was not staged, honestly. That man was a cop, and he was renting that house. And he had told us that he had found pieces of plastic, his dog had found them, where we dug. But there are two other sections I would like to dig. Since the movie came out, a lady has told us that in the bathroom, where the bathtub was, underneath is dirt, not wood or not cement.
Yeah.
So we want to look there, too. But in Texas, the owner has the option of not letting you look without a police warrant.
Right.
And as far as the police think, it's closed. Jason did it. It's over. But I want to find that kid's body.
I think
we owe that.
Charlie, do the police accept then that Jason murdered Nicholas? Or is it just a big question mark hanging over it?
Oh, yeah, sure. They do. The FBI accepts it. Everybody does. It's really what happened. And Beverly had brought Jason in because the true Nicholas Barclay was acting out so bad. He had hit a teacher. Can you imagine? Hit a school teacher.
Yeah.
He couldn't play with any of the kids because he had beat them up. And he was in trouble in the neighborhood. No one wanted him around. And the kid was just wild as a March hare, you know. There was just something about him that was made him wild. And he's a changeling. One other thing I want to tell you, listeners, the real Nicholas Barclay was a changeling. All of your kids, if you look at them, are changelings. One day you look at your child and he looks like a rock star.
Yeah.
The next day he looks like a soldier. The next day he looks like something else. And as they age and grow, they change. So the family, they didn't know what to expect. even though had they been a normal family, had they not been part of any of the thing, they might have just accepted him and gone. It would have gone on and nothing would have happened. You see, but it just happened that Hard Copy called and wanted to hire me and we stayed on the case. You know,
Charlie, what are you working on? I know that you won't let this rest, and this all happened a few years ago, but you're still following it through. What are you working on now? Are you allowed to say?
Yeah, cases I've got now. I've got mostly stalking cases. We have a lot of that in Texas, where stalkers are, you know, hunting people down. I'm doing bodyguard work. I still have in the back of my mind a lot of things since the movie, a lot of people that I've talked to that have come forward, and we're literally keeping the case alive through programs like you.
Yeah,
you know, when people put it back on the radio or put it on TV, and it makes people really look and listen.
And
I'm grateful that you would ask me to even talk on it. So other people out there listening may have new ideas.
Yeah,
Twitter them to me. And I'll take any ideas they have. You know.
Final question, Charlie. Do you? There's a really telling scene in the movie when the lady from the FBI phones up the sister and says, "That is not your brother. I'm bringing him back on an aeroplane. They've gone off somewhere. It is not your brother. Do not meet us at the airport." And the sister, bizarrely, turns up at the airport, pretends that conversation never happened, and embraces him and said, "Nicholas, it's great. You're coming home with me." Do you think...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you suspect that maybe Beverly, the mother, and the sister knew what Jason had done?
I believe afterwards they knew it.
Right.
I don't believe they participated in a conspiracy to kill him. I don't believe, but I believe afterwards they did it. I think Carrie was caught up in a thing. Her boss was paying her way to Spain. She wanted so badly to believe it was him. I don't think Carrie was involved in any kind of conspiracy at all. I think Beverly found out about it later. And I believe Beverly is aging on. I believe that Beverly will eventually tell me what happened. I think she will someday.
Yeah.
And I hope and pray that she does, and that we resolve this. And, you know, as far as the police are concerned, it's a victimless crime. And they know who did it, and the case is over. But I will not let it rest. I can promise you that.
Such a sad. I mean, it's fascinating, but such a sad story on so many levels. Charlie, you know, if you get any further, do please get in touch, and we'll have you on at a moment's notice. It's been such a thrill to talk to you, Charlie. I really appreciate your time. Thank you, mate.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Absolute Bye-bye. Pleasure. From Texas, Charlie Parker. What a... I nearly swore there and say, what a head flip. It really is. Wasn't it great hearing it from him? Wow. Wow, what a voice. Well, filming carries on now. Now it's up to you as to how we play this. That can be it, and we've done 40 minutes of radio, and that's beautiful. We move on and we start messing around on the phones. Or you can call in with your theories or your thoughts on the film. I know, interestingly, that some of you hated the film, couldn't get through it. That's all valid as well. You know, we're not all going to like all of the films that we choose to watch. And you can find out and say, "I thought the film was rubbish. It's boring. They missed loads out. It was flawed." You can say, "That's all groovy, man." You know, there's no right or wrong answer. So it's up to you. 0844 499 1000. I'd love to hear your theories. I'd love to know why you think the family were so willing to take this character on as their missing son and their missing brother. 0844 499 1000. Or if you don't fancy that, we can just, you know, go back to the normal business. Filmring is fluid, guys. You know, it has no set boundaries. It can go on all night, or it can finish now. It's entirely up to you. 0844 499 1000. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844 499 1000 is the phone number. We will talk about this a little bit longer, but of course, as per usual... Oh, look, let me just move that. As per usual, You can call in about anything you want, you know. But Catherine Boyle joins me in the studio.
Yes.
Did you enjoy the film, first of all? Because I know a lot of people hated it.
Enjoy isn't the word, is it? I found it really fascinating.
Yeah.
I thought the first part of it, he annoyed me. I can understand why some people turned it off.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, just watching this smug...
Stylistically...
But it was amazingly done.
I thought it was beautifully done with the dramatised scenes. They dropped that about halfway through though, which was a shame, because I liked that.
I liked it. It would fade from his account to the actor speaking his words.
And
it was brilliant.
Also, one has to be aware that with every documentary, there's going to be a constructed narrative. Mm-hmm. You know, there is not... It's a film. And it is a film that is coming from the bias, from the perspective, from the whatever of the director, of the guy that's, in this case, the guy that's made the film. And I think whenever you're watching a documentary, and it's hard to because I get kind of sucked in, but I do think, well, why did they keep that bit in and why didn't they do that bit? And yeah. I would have asked that, and why haven't they, you know, but they are following a narrative.
Yeah, and the details about Nicholas, I mean, when you first started hearing about this kid, I mean, he looks like a little angelic blonde kid, and, you know, you hear that he went off to play basketball one day and never came home. And then later on in the documentary, you hear that, you know, maybe things weren't quite as idyllic as it looked, you know, and this kid that wandered off to play basketball was possibly involved in darker stuff and had a hard time at home and wasn't quite... I mean, I think his mum said he wasn't the nice, innocent kid that you'd think he was, you know. And I watched the Q&A afterwards.
Okay, on the DVD, some of you won't, if you've watched this on YouTube or Vimeo, you won't have seen it. On the DVD, there is an excellent Q&A with the producer, the director and Charlie, hosted by John Ronson.
Because I wondered whether they'd done that on purpose, you know, whether the directors had deliberately led you along a path, you know, where you thought that this kid was, you know, just a poor innocent. And of course he is an innocent victim. You know, whatever happened to him, he didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
But didn't tell you the details of his home life, didn't give you details about what he used to get up to in the street and stuff. And they knew, but apparently they didn't. They dropped things in as and when they found out themselves, you know.
And bored that. And anyone who is... And don't harass him on Twitter, because it's not what this is about. I've asked people just to let him know. I imagine he's listening now. Frederick, you're more than welcome to call up. We will call you back. 08444991000. But as I say, I had messaged him, and I was hoping I could play up to his ego, and that he'd want to. But apparently, he's not seen the film. I don't believe that. And he blocked me. And so I asked people just to let him know that we were going to be doing it tonight. And I mean, vile, the C-bomb being bandied around.
Yeah, he's quite fruity with his language, isn't he?
And bitches and... I mean, it's vile. Which is his prerogative to do that, if that's what he wants to do.
It was undeserved. The questions were not rude.
Catherine, we know our listeners. Some of them deserve that, let's be honest. Some of them did.
He wasn't to know that.
08444991000. I mean, but what's interesting in the film is the reveal that when they finally work out that he's wanted by Interpol, and he has done this dozens and dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah. All these different names, all these different places.
What were the... I mean, there's a weird bit in there as well when he's in the Spanish children's home. And he says, yeah, what I need, right, is I need to be in the office on my own all night so I can phone up my mum and tell her that I've been found.
Because it's in America and there's a time difference.
And they go, yeah, OK, fine. And that's when he spends, like, literally all night ringing around all of the police departments in America, finding out what missing children, what missing people there were, to see if he thought he looks like any of them.
Wouldn't that show up on their phone bill?
You would think so. You would think so.
Also, a vulnerable kid like that, why would you... It just wouldn't happen, would it? But then you speak to... Then they actually spoke to the police officer, didn't they, later on, and said, you know, would you have given him this information? Oh, no, we never do that. And then they went, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, we faxed it to him.
Yeah, we faxed it to him. It's... I mean, it... You can still see the film, guys. Please, you know, still watch the film. You know, it's worth doing. I'm worried about this call, but we'll take it. Yes, Rob?
So... Hey, Kathy, all right?
Hey, up.
I've seen you've tweeted.
Yeah, King Ralph.
I've seen that you've tweeted to Frederick Bourdin. Hi, fella. In terms of the film, can I ask, do you think King Ralph should have stayed on as the king?
Well, that's a valid question.
It is a valid question.
I think you might get a C-bomb for that, and I can't defend you against it.
I got... I went to see King Ralph at the cinema.
Did you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Good for you, fella.
I paid top dollar to go and see that. Isn't it the royal family gets blown up by a bomb?
Every single one.
No. There's a dodgy photographer, Ian.
Oh, yeah.
And they all get together for a photograph. And because it's raining, the dodgy photographer wipes out the entire royal family. Now, what happens is they have to seek around the world for the next royal heir. And it turns out one of the old kings had a fling, and that's led to lounge singer Ralph Jones.
Thing is, he's not reading this, guys. He knows this. He actually knows this.
So, anyway, he becomes King Ralph.
Uh-huh.
And he's helped out by Peter O'Toole. And there's a clever twist.
He plays Great Balls of Fire on the piano, doesn't it? It's the only bit I remember from it.
With Ralph and the Dukettes at the end.
He is... what's his name? John Goodman. John Goodman is, I'm going to say this, after James Franco, who's my new gay choice, John Goodman is the second best actor in the world. Everything he is in... Even if it's so-so, he just brings it up a notch. He raises everybody else's game. I'll
tell you what, he was excellent in Monsters, Inc.
Excellent in Monsters, Inc. Excellent in True Stories. Excellent in Mother Night. He's excellent in every...
Roseanne.
Mother Night, it's him and Nick Nolte, the insane genius. Nick Nolte is insane. I mean, like, properly nuts. They just put him in front of a camera and, you know, he's lucky if he's not turned up in his pyjamas. He's got actual clothes on. He's nuts, Nick Nolte. But James Franco is my new gay choice. This weekend, I caned, thanks to...
he's often doing, like, bed shots and stuff.
Well, exactly. Thanks to Rob Bonet's help this weekend, I watched all of the television series 11, 22, 63. Or as I like to call it, the British 22, 11, 63. Where James Franco... goes through a cupboard at the back of a diner back to 1960.
Oh, it's like American Goodnight Sweetheart.
Kind of. Yeah, he does sing a Beatles song. He goes, oh, I wrote it with my mates, John, Paul, George and Ringo. She goes, what? He goes, ah, you'll know. And he goes back in time to save President Kennedy.
Right.
Have you seen it, Rob?
It's on my list to watch.
I did it in two days.
You had the big telly. I was downstairs. You had the big telly upstairs.
Sorry about that. It is flipping brilliant. And at the end is all schmaltzy, and I was in floods of tears. Floods of tears. Beautifully done. Well done, James Franco. Good guy. Good actor. He does a lot of the... when I used to act, when I was in a sitcom, and someone saw...
Are you all right there, Rob?
Sorry, coughing.
Someone, there is a persuasionist reunion happening, Rob.
Gosh.
And someone described my acting style as the who's farted acting. Where I'd go like that a lot.
Oh yeah.
He does a lot of who's farted. Does that?
Yeah, but he's also good.
Yeah, he's bloody good. Best actor in the world.
Is it one season or is it one of these that's open to life?
One season. It's a contained story. This is why I watched it. It's a contained story. 8 episodes. There's a start, there's an ending. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye. Bye, everyone. We finished. It's a wrap. See you series 2? There is no series 2.
I'll get a watch.
Yeah. Anyway, Rob, what would you like to say?
King Ralph for the next film ring and going to get me a call like James Franco. It doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't. And also, so when you say James Franco in that high-pitched voice, it sounds like you're saying James Winker.
All right, then. Love you, Kath. See you soon.
I love you back.
He's in Cloverfield Lane as well, John Goodman.
Oh. I thought you were going to say Franco.
No, I don't really know a lot about Franco. What was he in? What did he get famous in?
I don't know, apart from The Dreams of Many. I just like him. He's got that kind of glint of madness that appeals to me.
Yeah.
Like Dennis Quaid used to do it for me when I was younger.
Yeah.
Mental.
Yeah, mental.
Yeah, I could flip out any time.
Okay. I'll wait 444-499.
That's what I go for.
1,000 is the... Like Jerry Lewis?
No.
I'm really getting into my Jerry Lewis at the moment, as you heard from that brilliant song at the start of the show. I love it. You find him annoying. I find him annoying.
He's a bit like how Jim Carrey I never used to like when he was doing his rubber face stuff.
That scene that I showed you, the clips from a scene.
That was funny.
That was brilliant.
And it was skillful.
That was brilliant.
But it would annoy me.
Yeah, I know. I find him annoying.
People nearly knocking things over repeatedly is kind of annoying.
I'm just trying to...
access my inner child. And I remember as a kid loving those films, loving Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin films, and even some of his solo films, like The Nutty Professor and... what's the one? It's called, like, The Chambermaid, but it's not... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So I'm going through a very big Jerry Lewis. I'm reading this massive tome about him. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, wait,
good luck with that.
Thank you very much indeed. 0844 499 1000. I've got a blinding headache. I've taken all those pills you've given me.
You give me snake eye. I've got some more, but I don't think you should take any more.
Shut up. You don't know what you don't know.
Well.
And I'm licking my lips. I'm going to see if I start yawning.
We're in trouble.
We are screwed. We watched, for the first time this weekend, we watched Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
Never seen it before. And I remember I've seen bits of it. I remember when it came out. This microphone sounds crap when you're on that, so if we'll swap later for that moment, it's fine for the moment. I remember when it came out, my friend Richard, we don't get on now, said, I wonder if in 20 years' time, because the special effects were so amazing.
They were.
Will we be able to see their special effects? Well, 20 years ago me, yes, you can. Actually, they're a little bit pony, it turns out.
Oh, yeah, that's a shame.
And the boys got bored by it.
My sister fell asleep in the cinema when we went to see that.
It's not all that, is it? It's
no,
very
but
slow.
You've got to remember Sam that back Neill's then good. It was about showing off the special effects.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit slow, really. And no, all right, this is the phone in. 0844 499 1000. Insane actors. Goldblum. Actors that at any moment could snap.
Yeah, they've got that.
Goldblum.
Quaid.
Quaid and Nolte. That's what we've got so far.
Franco.
Franco, but he's kind of he's medicated, I suspect. I may actually be right on that. I don't know. I know Nolte was for a while. Anyway, 0844 499 1000. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.
Evening, dear listener. Don't be shy. Quiet on the phones. There's no reason for that. You're more than welcome to call in. You don't have to if you don't want. Me and Kath will just sit here chatting. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call, we'd call you back. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a man so fine. I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone fast with a girl named Bo, but somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for a living in the movies and TV. But the hardest thing I ever do is watch my leading ladies kiss some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I've never spent much time in school, but I taught ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay.
Hey, hey!
I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Raquel Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay. An open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine, cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
And I don't want to get too meta, guys. I don't want to get too meta, but we do have to establish how well film ring works as a radio thing. We've done it twice. We're not going to do it every week. We might do it every other week, every third week, something like that. But I'm aware that some people might not dig it, and it might not be for everyone. And a couple of people have suggested, well, if you haven't seen the film, you wouldn't dig it. Well, we asked about that last time, and it seemed that people did enjoy it if they hadn't seen the film. Do give us your thoughts, honestly, you know, whether it... because I don't like features anyway. I'm very anti-features, and this would be the closest I've come to doing a feature out of choice for a long, long time. I think it's good.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, there's, like, film 2016. You watch that without seeing all the films. That's not... a bad thing, is it?
But they don't go into as much detail about the, you know, don't devote an hour of radio to it. So I don't know. Your thoughts, please. 0844 499 1000. Bonkers actors: Lindsay Lohan, Nicolas Cage. Oh yes,
Cage.
Gary Busey, of course, and Klaus Kinski. I don't know who Klaus Kinski is, so we'll have to see. 0844 499 1000.
Is Dennis Quaid's brother, Randy Quaid, still on the run from the law?
I don't know. Was he on the run from the law?
Yeah, he and his wife.
Charlie Sheen, of course.
No.
No, but I'm saying Charlie Sheen is nuts.
Yes. Randy Quaid and his wife. Randy Quaid's got a massive beard, bigger than yours now, like proper Grizzly Adams. And he ran off to Canada with his wife. They'd been squatting in their own home. They were convinced that they were going to be the victims of this Hollywood murder ring.
A murder ring?
A murder ring.
Murder ring, wow.
That had been killing off, film stars. And so they sort of...
Hang on, what film stars have been killed off by the murder ring?
I don't know. Let me look into it, because it's been a while. I think they're still on the run, though. Let me check.
I've been reminded, Teresa, thank you. James Franco, of course, was in the TV series Freaks and Geeks.
Yes.
That's who he was. And he was the cool stoner. Such a good programme. Mm-hmm. Such a good programme. And there's a sort of an unofficial sequel called... It's not a sequel, but it's a lot of the same cast. And they're all at college. Can't remember what it's called. Noah, Simon, stay there. Let's go to Tom. Yes, Tom?
Oh, hi, Ian. How you doing?
Wow, Randy Quaid looks like...
Father Christmas.
No, he looks like an American comedian who's in the Sarah Silverman show when he grew a big bushy beard. Can't remember his name. I'm good, thank you, Tom. What you got for us?
Well, it's actually a bit of medical advice.
Yes?
Completely free.
Oh, beautiful. I like that, yes.
You mentioned you had a very nasty headache.
Yes, sir!
Yes, drink a pint of water.
What?
A pint of water.
What?
Over the course of the next half an hour, rehydrate you. You don't need medicine.
Well.
I think I am. I'm drinking a lot of water at the moment, because I'm trying to lose weight. Although, I'm going to be honest, the last 5 days have just been a car crash for that. Start again tomorrow. I have been drinking a lot of water. In fact, I need to go and do PP now.
Oh, okay. Maybe you're drinking too much water.
Whoa, Thomas!
Doctor, I'm starting to doubt your credentials.
Come on, Thomas.
I doubt them myself, so I don't blame you.
I was always told, we're not going to do a phone-in. If I've got a terrible headache, how would you cure it? Because I've actually done that back in the day. But someone taught me that if you rub the fleshy part between your thumb and your Peter pointer finger, if you rub it quite hard, you feel it. Does it feel tense in yours,
no.
Catherine? Right. It feels tense in mine because I've got a headache. And if you do it really hard, it will ease. And it works a bit, actually. It will ease the tension in your head. Being cold for me is the cure all the time for headaches and migraines. If I sit in my car...
It's not that cold in here, you know.
It's as cold as it'll go. It's on 17. That's as cold. This is why I hate coming into a hot studio. Hate it. No, it's good. You want it on... Oh, fan.
Yeah, I was going to put it on fan. See,
is fan better than cool?
Well, let's see.
Let's find out.
It's cold in here. Normally, I feel it.
Tom, thank you for that suggestion. Did you enjoy Film Ring?
I'm afraid I only tuned in a few moments ago.
Oh, you absolute... What were you doing for the last hour, Tom?
I've been playing music all evening.
Oh, what have you been playing?
What specifically? You mean what instrument? What genre?
Let's start with the instrument, and then we're going to guess the music.
If you do, hats off. It's I play an amateur in an amateur group, amateur orchestra, viola. Oh. It's slightly larger than a violin.
Oh, beautiful! I know what a viola is. I had on Radio 4 the other day on Front Row. Now this microphone still sounds crap because you're on there. On Radio 4 the other day, they on the Front Row, the arts program, they had like a distant relative of the violin. And I can't remember what it was called, but it was the most god-awful racket.
Yes, it was probably a vial.
It was a vial! It was a vial! It was the most awful... And there's this orchestra that play the vial. Turns out it's not actually related to the violin. It was related to something else. I can't remember what. And they were going, well, this sounds really great. Why don't you play us a piece now? And they would play a piece, and it was bloody, it was like cats screeching.
It sounded horrendous.
It's an awful thing. No wonder it's a long-forgotten, almost dead instrument. Let it die.
Yeah, it should be. I knew someone that made a living playing medieval-type instruments, yeah. including the viola a bit later. He went from pub to pub, and one evening, about midnight, the cops saw him getting out of the... loading up all these instruments into his car and followed him. And they got fed up because they followed him for 10 miles and he hadn't gone anywhere. So they pulled him over in the rain.
Yeah.
And they said, what's in your van? And he said, some medieval instruments. And they said, we don't believe you. And he said, all right, I'll play them. And he played every one. Well, actually, he didn't play every one because, as you said, the racket was horrendous. So they just let him go.
I hope when he plays those instruments for money, they pay him in shekels and groats.
Yes, or tomatoes.
Okay, so you're playing the viola.
That's it.
So you were playing country music.
It was composed in a country, but it was classical.
Very generous, Tom. Very generous. Thank you, mate. All right, man. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate that. We're going to try one more thing. Catherine, can you try that?
Flipping it.
Because it sounds awful. This when another mic is open. Close that mic, please, Emma. There we go. And now it sounds all right. When another mic is open, my mic sounds bloody awful. So try that one. Just open that one, please. Let's have a listen. I think that's better. But now I bet you sound tinny.
Well, hang on, let's find out.
I mean, but while you're doing that, let's talk to Noah. Yes, Noah.
Hello.
Oh, it's Jonathan.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm fine. I've got two bonkers actors for you.
Yes.
And a sinister actor.
Oh, okay, we can do that. We can do sinister as well, yes.
Okay, well, the actor would be Terence Hardiman.
Who's Terence Hardiman?
Terence Hardiman played the demon headmaster the children's show.
But I wouldn't say he was a nuts actor. I would just say that he was good at playing a nuts person.
He's very sinister on screen.
Yeah, but that's just acting.
He's an excellent actor.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But every time he would appear as the chief abbot on Cadfile, me and my friends would think, well, he did it and hypnotised some other bloke to take the rap.
You've just reminded me, which one of the Fox brothers went bonkers? Is it James Fox or Edward Fox? I thought it was James Fox. One of them made a film with Mick Jagger called Performance in 1969, right? And it's a horrible film. I don't think it's particularly good, but it's become a bit of a cult classic. And it is rumoured that to get into the part of someone who is a straight, who then, kind of becomes brainwashed by Mick Jagger, who is not straight, Mr. Fox took loads of LSD. And it broke him. As a human being, it broke him. And he went and lived in a monastery for years. Now, if it was
James Fox,
was it James Fox? Well, I've worked with James Fox. I've worked with James Fox and Mariah. Just a posh way of saying Maria. She was married to a politician.
Oh, flipping out.
Mariah. She was so sexy. An older woman, and she just exuded everyone. All the men wanted to please her, not pleasure her. Well, they did want to pleasure her, but they wanted to just please her and make her happy. But type in Jinnah Mariah, she's the wife of a politician.
Put Mariah actress.
Mariah Aitken, Jeremy Aitken's. He went to prison, didn't he?
Jonathan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dum 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 dum. And go on. Who else you got for us, Jonathan?
Well, the bonkers actors. First of all, you got Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, I'll give you that, yes.
Yeah, and the other one, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, oh, of course. You always suspect that Jack Nicholson is just one line of cocaine away from collapsing on set.
Do you remember when Christian Slater was the new Jack Nicholson?
I've met Christian, as I like to call him.
They've got the same eyebrows, haven't they?
Yes, they have. He's good, Christian. Heathers is a good film.
Yeah.
Cuffs is a good film, and he was good in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I like that.
Here's someone no one's mentioned yet, and he's a British actor.
Oh, yeah.
Who has a glint of madness in his
eye. Oh, the bloke who played Barry Grant?
No.
No, okay.
Tom Baker.
Oh, no. You've not read Tom Baker. Have you read Tom Baker's autobiography, Jonathan?
I read bits of it years ago.
It is brilliant. I've got to bring it in because it's not what you're expecting at all, Catherine. And it's funny you should mention Tom Baker because I have been looking for guests for the show.
Oh, I emailed him ages ago.
Yeah, but you didn't get anything back?
No.
Well, I got a reply. Sent it out. Tom Baker. I can't find it, but basically they said no.
Oh.
So,
I think I prefer to be ignored.
He refuses. Jonathan, thank you very much indeed. Simon Rashid, stay there. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. We're doing bonkers actors. And genuinely, I would like some feedback. First hour of the show, what do you reckon? Does it stay or does it go? Oh, I'm not going to get prissy about it. I'm keen to hear your thoughts. 0844 499 1000.
Uncut after hours conversation for the up all night generation. Late night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844 499 1000 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. Simon's on the line. Good evening, Simon.
Hello.
Hello.
This is going to sound quite horrible, yeah. And I might get a bit of backlash
Uh-oh.
From this.
Uh-oh.
But when I watched Imposter, I was a little bit disappointed at the end when the body wasn't found.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really feel it concluded.
No.
There's no backlash to that. It doesn't sound horrible at all. No, this is an open forum. I guess I know what you mean. But it wasn't a movie, was it? That's the thing. If it was a Hollywood movie, then there would have been a conclusion. You know, it would have ended with him pulling out a skull and going, ah. And I suppose because it's real life, and the fact that several years later on, they still haven't found anything.
But, I mean, with Kung Fu Elliot, there was a conclusion because he obviously went crazy and then he ran off, didn't he, to Mongolia.
Speaking of crazy actors, Elliot Scott, there's one, by the way, there's one. I know what you mean.
Because I mean, my theory is that the boy's actually still alive somewhere.
Oh, and you said that a little bit of heavenly music, like a little heavenly jingle. Why do you think that?
Because if he was a tearaway and he didn't like his family or anything,
yeah,
maybe he ran away. He ran away. Then with nothing more to do with him. And, you know, a lot of people run away to Mexico or wherever, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think maybe he's still out there. He changed his name and everything.
Yeah, possible. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. But unlike one would have thought, if that were the case, that with a movie coming out, with the publicity that
would he want it though?
There's quite a lot.
I mean, he don't like his family, did he?
I think he's dead. I think he's dead, and I think the older brother did it. And you know, don't think, may not have deliberately set out to do it, but I think he did it. And I think that the guilt and the shame around that would have exacerbated any, you know, drug problems that may have been there before. He would have been consumed with guilt. It would have fueled his drugs. And then when his family accepts what he knows is obviously not his brother, accepts that strange man as his brother, it sent them over the edge. That's what I think.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I'm not convinced.
What do you think as a concept, Simon, filming? Does it work?
Do you know what? Both these films I wouldn't have watched without you saying, watch these films.
Yeah.
And both of them I've enjoyed.
Okay. Well, you may not enjoy the next one or the one after that if we carry on doing it. That's, you know, a distinct possibility.
It's not that I enjoyed The Imposter. It just got me thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the aim of filming, isn't it? To get you thinking and questioning things.
I think so, Simon. Listen, well, thank you for taking part. It's appreciated. I know loads of you have watched the films and you know, the two films you've had so far. By the way, Filmring Live, August 21st, sold out. 100 tickets. So there'll be 110 people there because we've got 10 tickets to divvy out of these chances at work. So 110 people, 20 people standing. We're going to be showing... I still not received my DVD.
That's a little bit of a worry, isn't it?
Well, I've got access to a hooky copy of it, actually. But I will chase it up. We will be showing They Killed My Cat. Maybe The Stalker. We'll see how long they are.
Yeah.
extra scenes. I need to email Jarrett to get some extra scenes that weren't in Kung Fu Elliot. Jarrett's going to be on Skype, maybe Matthew, and a very special guest. Very special guest will also be taking part via computer technology or maybe the phone. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. I think that'll be quite a good night. August the 21st is when that's happening. The day after, I'm hosting a programme on Channel 5. I'm back on telly.
There'll be no talking to you.
I'm having a week
like
off.
Like Kathy.
I'm going up to the Edinburgh Festival. So I'm having Friday the
12th. My birthday, Cunning.
Yes, exactly. I'll get you two presents next year. I'm going up to the Edinburgh Festival. I'm doing at least two shows at the Edinburgh Festival. I'm doing at least four shows at the Edinburgh Festival. And I might be doing Ian Lee versus Radio, but I don't know yet. They've not got back to me about whether we're doing that. Follow me on Twitter and I'll give you ticket details, or I'll mention it tomorrow. And then I've got a week off when I'm going to write the book. That's the plan.
In a week?
Yeah, I think I can do it.
Yeah, sounds reasonable.
I've done three chapters.
All right, sorted. You're going to do some pictures?
Well, Miranda Sawyer said you only need 80,000 words.
She didn't say you only needed 80,000 words. She said you need about 80,000 words.
Yeah, well, I've got about 10,000 already with the three chapters.
Right.
So...
a few more.
70,000 more. Easy. Craig, Rashid, stay there. I'm just having an argument. 0844 499 1000 if you want to take part.
Are you?
And then on August the 20th, I'm back, baby. I'm back in the big time. I'm back on TV. I'm hosting a TV programme on Channel 5 with Gabby Roslin. Yes, who is the nicest lady in the world.
Oh.
And I will be hosting it. And I'm going to be awesome. And I'm going to keep the beard, but I'm going to trim it. Trim it like Michael Jackson. Not Michael Jackson.
Michael Greco.
George Michael in about 86.
Oh, right.
Because you got to have a faith. I got to have faith. Baby. Yes.
You're such a plum.
No, mate, I'm Britain's greatest. Can they see any of us here?
No, and this is silly.
They can watch you. There we go.
I don't want them to...
I'm going to be... anyway, I wait for 499 1000. Yes, Rashid!
Wham! Bam! I am a man. Job or no job, you can't tell me that I'm not.
Do you enjoy what you do?
Sitting on the toilet doing a big wee and a poo. I didn't know the line was job or no job.
No, I didn't know any
I didn't
of
those
know lyrics.
That, Rashid. Your enunciation is excellent.
Brilliant. Thank you.
What you got for us, Rash?
Film Ring.
Yeah.
I watched the second half today while I was cleaning my bedroom.
Yeah.
I wasn't fully concentrating, but I wanted to ask you guys, did you see the twist coming? Could you see it coming? Because when the twist came for me, it was like, bam, I didn't expect that at all.
I tell you, when my suspicions were aroused, when she said that Nicholas had rung home and the brother took a phone call and the mum didn't get out of bed, I thought, boom.
Yeah.
Something up there.
Can I just say, we've got someone suggesting Jack Black as a nuts actor. He's not nuts, though. He's not. He couldn't at any moment... pull out a knife and kill someone. Whereas all of these actors, I think, could. So I'm not having... Jack Black is just good at playing... He's just wacky.
Yeah.
Right? But we've got Mel Gibson and Christopher Walken and Dennis Hopper. You know it.
Crazy actors who could go nuts at any time.
Yeah.
David Banner.
Right.
David Banner.
He's not an actor, he's a scientist.
Oh, right, OK.
He's a bloody doctor.
Dr. David Banner. Clues in the doctor bit.
Okay, never mind. Well, Film Club, I enjoyed it, but it depends on the rest of the listeners here, unless you're going to carry on.
Well, I know it does. I know it's not. Well, Rashid said it, so yes. So
everyone other than Rashid, what do you think?
I know, and it's going to be. There will be people that don't like it, and there'll be people that do. I do like it. And I'm going to stick with my... I tell you what's making me question is the fact we didn't get many calls at the end of it. And that's fine.
I think I know why.
Why? Pourquoi?
Because, we're talking about a dead kid, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, no one wants to be speculating about stuff like that.
It wasn't... Yeah, it's not... okay, here's the thing. In Kung Fu, there was two things. One, it was funny. And B...
He kind of brought it on himself.
There's a question mark over whether it's real. So you've got that as the phone in. Do you think it's real or not? Boom. And we had people trying to catch Jarrett and Matthew out. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to catch Charlie out on. You know, he did his job and we didn't have the filmmakers on. So there's nothing really to catch them out on. Whereas Kung Fu Elliot, you know, there's the big question mark over whether it's real or spoof.
And you can watch it either way, you know.
Yeah. And I will bear that in mind when we choose the third film.
The next film, can we have that, I mean, anything but not pathological liars. Both of them were liars. So.
Oh, there is a theme.
Rashid, thank you very much indeed. Yeah, anything but pathological liars.
Oh, but they're our favourites.
They're our favourites. Do send me your suggestions. Lance has asked if it's always going to be documentaries.
Well, yeah, because I had quite a good film suggested to me today, but it's not a documentary.
Go on.
The Audition.
The Japanese film? Uh-huh. Oh, no, we can't watch that. That's...
Does it spin out of control too much?
Have you not seen it?
No, I had it described,
the beginning of it described to me. The beginning's nothing. You want to get to the bit when he's... There's a brilliant bit where he takes a drink and it's drugged and he falls over, right? And he's falling. And then as he's falling, there's like a... It cuts to a 20-minute scene... And then it cuts back to him just as he falls. It's nuts. It's the guy who did that. I got really into him for a while. I can't think of his name. Beat Kitano, Takashi Kitano. It's Miyake. It's Miyake Tom.
Miyake Takashi Miyake.
There we go. He also did a brilliant film, right? I think it was him, called Happiness of the Katakuris. And it's a musical. And it's about this family that they inherit a bed and breakfast, but it's haunted. And it's a musical. It's flipping brilliant. Happiness of the Katakuris. It's absolutely genius. His films, though, he also did, I think he did the film where the guy gets hung up with little hooks on his back and he's hanging up and he's a tattooed Yakuza and... Itchy the Killer. Itchy the
but
Killer.
It was itchy,
yeah,
it?
Flipping well, Itchy the Killer. He's good. No, we're not going to do Audition.
No, that's not.
I think Audition is too dark. Really.
So you want something that's a bit fun?
I don't know. I don't want to, you know, kind of... I'm open to suggestions, OK? All right. But all the suggestions I've had so far, I've been pony. 08444991000.
Late Night Ian Lee. On air and off the loop. On Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I'm trying to find the song from The Happiness of the Katakuris, and it's one really, really good pop song on it, and I'm trying to find it, and I can't, so we'll get there in a bit. Who's been there the longest? Craig has. Yes, Craig!
Hi, Ian. Hi, Kath.
Hi, yeah.
This James Franco.
Yeah.
He's one of... There's four group of actors... that I always get mixed up, and he's one of them.
Right. Oh, go on. Explain.
Well, James Franco and Jared Leto.
Yeah.
I always think they're the same guy.
I don't know who Jared Leto is.
He's like the older James Franco.
He's in the new Suicide Squad. He's the Joker in that. You might have seen him.
No.
He's also a pop star. Look, that fella.
Requiem for a Dream with Jennifer Connelly. He was in that. Very similar to James Franco.
Yeah, he's a pretty boy. He's in the same camp, isn't he?
But that's one set. I got four sets of people. That's the one set.
That's not set number one. Set number two. We're moving on to set number two.
Alan Rickman and Gary Oldman. I always mix them up.
How could you mix those two up?
Just similar type of...
No!
Face. No, they're not.
Not in the slightest.
Gary Oldman's a wee fella.
Well, in my opinion...
Okay,
all right, well, we can't touch that then.
Terence Stamp and Charles, what's his name, Dance?
No. Hang one of them's Ginger.
No, I'll give him that. Those two are very similar.
Stamp and Dance,
can I just see if this is the song I'm thinking of? Hang on a second. I'll see if this is the song I'm thinking of. There's a really catchy song from this Japanese horror film. Hang on a minute. Bear with me. Slow internet. I agree with him on those, though.
No.
Definitely. Here we go.
No.
No, it's not that. Not that one.
The final set is Josh Hartnett and Ethan Hawke.
I don't really know who these people are. I've heard the names, right? I'm aware of them.
But like, in a film, I'll go, oh, yeah, definitely that was Ethan Hawke or Josh Hartnett.
And it'll be the other one.
And, yeah, and it happens to me all the time.
Both of those have got kind of nice squinty eyes, haven't they?
Yeah. But, like, literally, like, when you said James Franco, I was going, oh, that's Jared Leto. I was going, all the films I was thinking James Franco was in, it was Jared Leto was in them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, Craig, what do you like, eh?
I know. Oh, and two crazy actors. An old one, Robert Mitchum.
Oh, flipping heck, he was crazy in them songs.
Oh, he was. He loved a little bit of the old reefer.
Well,
Bobby, he loved a little toe cup. He did. He read a brilliant book on him when we were at 3CR. He would do like sort of six films a year, and one would be good, and the rest would pay him a lot of money and be rubbish.
I think my dad read that book. And is that the one where he wheezes on someone?
Yeah. Loved all that.
Didn't he have some director on the throat over a cliff or something?
Yeah. Does all that. He loves all that stuff.
And a modern day Tom Hardy. Especially in Peaky Blinders.
Oh, is he the one with the eyes? Who's the one with the eyes in Peaky Blinders?
He's the Jewish guy from London.
But there's a guy with the eyes, Cillian Murphy. Is that his name?
Is that the 28 Days Later guy?
He's the guy. He's got the eyes.
They've all got eyes.
No,
they?
But he's got the eyes. For goodness sakes, you know, doesn't anyone know what I mean? He's got the eyes.
Well, they've all got eyes.
Google Cillian Murphy.
Google Tom Hardy. That's that fella.
Yeah, all right, whatever. It looks boring. Google Cillian Murphy.
Right, okay.
Especially in Peaky Blinders, he's a psychopath. Mind you, they all are.
Google Cillian Murphy and look for the eyes. He's got Pete Townsend eyes. Yeah, look at his eyes.
Yeah, cold, dead eyes.
The steely eyes of a killer.
It's got cheekbones you could grate cheese on.
If someone can tell me, there's a really catchy song in Happiness of the Katakuris. Lino, I'm looking at you on Twitter. It's only about a minute and a half long, and it was absolutely brilliant, but I can't find it. No, Johnny Depp, Sam, you've not got this. Johnny Depp is not crazy. Johnny Depp is pretend crazy.
So in his private life, he might be.
Johnny Depp is pretend crazy. If the mics are opposite each other, they need to be in phase. A lot of desks have a phase switch to fix.
Well, not this one.
We haven't even got faders that work in this desk.
Apparently they reset the desks on Thursday, which is when we notice the problems on Friday, right?
Did they reset the desks? Mm-hmm. There we go.
This is what's happened.
My sister says I still get Bob Hoskins and... Well, she says Hoskins and Winstone mixed up. I'm assuming she means Bob, not Katie.
Jamie. Who's Katie Winstone?
No, Hoskins. Who's Katie Hoskins? Hopkins. That's who I think.
TV hard man Katie Hopkins.
TV hard man Katie Hopkins. All right, Craig, was there anything else?
Yeah, if you like that Stephen King thing with Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Wayward Pines. I know it's in the second series.
Oh, you won't like it.
Hang on a minute. Should we go on? What is it?
Wayward Pines.
No. What is it?
It's got Toby Jones in there.
Yeah, I like Toby Jones.
Matt Dillon.
I don't know who any of these actors are. I know Toby Jones.
You won't
basically,
like it.
It's set like in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then weird things happen.
Yeah.
And there's loads of loose ends, and you're watching the whole series, and you're going, this is stupid.
Yeah.
But it all ties up by the end.
I started watching it and gave up. So if I've done that, he'll definitely
Well, hang
that.
On, you don't know what I like, though.
You don't like TV programmes made in America where they string it out, and they don't half string it out.
Well, is there a conclusion at the end?
Yeah.
I'm in.
It is. I say that. There's a second series, but there's the conclusion of this. They could have left it at the conclusion.
They should have left it.
Series.
They should have left it. They explained too much, I think.
Oh, right. I'm getting bored of this conversation, so I'm going to cut you off. Tom, stay there. Yes, Alex.
Hello there.
Hello, Alex. 0844-499-1000. We call you back. Yes, Alex.
Just want to say, Film Ring, really enjoyed it. First time I've ever taken part in something like that. The documentary was a little bit weird for me.
Yeah.
But... stuck with it, but I think obviously having the private detective on tonight really helped and cleared up a few of the points that were kind of confusing from the documentary.
Yeah.
So I honestly do think that it's something you need to, you know, continue with if you can.
Thank you.
But again, I think having that person that can come on, which can kind of...
That's the thing. That's what we need. We need someone who is somehow involved with the film, either a maker or someone who's in it. What do you reckon, Alex? Do you think that poor Nicholas Barkley, the missing child, is dead?
Yeah, I think, if I'm honest, everything that points come out of that film, from what you see and all the characters and, you know, hearing from what the private detective had to say tonight, you have to come to that conclusion. But I think the character, the
the guy who impersonates him, he's just so complex. You could have done a whole show just on him and his backstory.
Yeah.
Which is maybe something and something else.
It is, you know, mentioned briefly in the film that he's done this dozens and dozens of times. That he's wanted by Interpol. He's done it since, I think. And he's obviously feisty. He doesn't play by society's rules, hence him, you know, swearing at me. Well, he didn't swear at me, actually. No, he did swear. But, you know, being thoroughly abusive to a lot of the listeners and not wanting to play the game. I know if you watch the DVD extras, the Q&A with John Ronson, the director, and the director, John Ronson kind of asked him what was Frederick's, you know, attitude towards the film been. And you can see the director get quite annoyed and said, well, actually, Frederick's been very rude about the film. He claims not to have seen it. He's put a massive rant online. And to be honest, if he wants to go and see it now, he'll have to go and pay because I'm not going to make it easy for him. And you know, it's interesting that, that there is obviously tension. Mm-hmm. But which makes me really, really weird. I think it's really, really weird that he was even in the film anyway, because he seemed so compliant when he was in the film.
Well, I think that's one of the things that I took from it. Again, I watched it Saturday. Wife and the kids were out all day. I thought, I've got an opportunity now. I'll sit down and watch it. And again, obviously, when he does appear and, you know, he introduced himself, you think, oh, well, it's the person that's done this invitation. It's actually appearing in the documentary, which I thought was a really interesting twist because, you know, usually you'd expect that, you know, that'd be played by an actor and it'd all be different things. But I thought that was very interesting. But as I said, I think I did hear about, obviously, the first film you did, but that didn't kind of interest me. So I didn't watch it. I did listen to the show afterwards where you had the directors on and things like that. And I still thought it was very interesting.
Right.
So
nice one, Alex.
It's one of those things you either like it or don't, and listen or don't. Simple
Brilliant.
As that.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Tom and Alan, stay there. 0844 499 1000. This might be the song. Hang on a second. Lino is... has found the song, which he's normally good at this kind of stuff. Although your link isn't work. Here we go. Is this it? Let's see. I'll know quite early on if it is. This is it. No, that's not it. It's a scene in the film where they're sort of like they're marching along in a field, and the little girl sings a line on her own. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We've got more important things to worry about.
Late Night Ian Lee. Unfiltered Night Talk with the original king of unconventional conversation on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
0844 499 1000. Yes, Tom. Tom?
Oh, yes, sorry.
That's all right.
Hi, Ian. You okay?
I'm fine, thanks. Tom, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Right, I've got a bonkers actor for you.
Yes, please, let's have it.
Okay, Rip Torn. Now, you might remember him from the Larry Sanders
Show. That's
who
he is, yes. Is he bonkers?
Right, there is a film that he made in about 1970 with Norman Mailer.
Yeah.
I've actually sent you a link. It's not a very nice clip to watch. It goes on for about 9 minutes.
Lots of swearing. I saw that on the Twitter. Yeah, very sweary, you said, yes.
Yeah, and he actually genuinely hits Norman Mailer on the head with a hammer, and they have a fight, and it's a nasty kind of fight. And some of the other actors come along and break it up because they're not kidding. They're not joking around.
Yes, he may be nuts in that.
Yeah, well, okay, watch the clip and tell me he's cured any time in his life. I mean, he really is crazy.
But that's in that one clip, and I look forward to seeing it. But
yeah,
in everything else, though, he's been kind of quite straight.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm on about his private life. I think he's had some really serious run-ins recently. I mean, I think he's been out with a dressing gown and a gun in the street.
Oh, well, that's...
I mean, the guy's like 70-plus now, so, you know.
All right, well, I'll check it out, Tom.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. That was a deep inhalation, wasn't it?
It really was.
Very deep inhalation there. Well, I've put it off as long as I can, but it's the only call we've got left. Yes, Alan.
You've been holding that in all weekend, haven't you?
Wowzers.
No, it's because I went to the cinema tonight.
What? Oh, what did you see?
The new Ghostbusters.
Oh, here we go. Any good?
Brilliant. Funny in places, bit scary in places, but really good.
I'm looking forward to it, right? I want to go and see it. My boys watched the first Ghostbusters at the weekend, the original one, and it was...
Weren't they scared?
No.
That bit in the library scared the bitches.
He said, my eldest,
the
6-year-old, the 4-year-old, fair play, was asleep. They're obsessed with Ghostbusters, right? Even though they've never seen it. So we bought the Ghostbusters cartoon. They like that. And the eldest liked the film. We said it was scary, but it was the good scary. But I don't know how much these 80s films, I've never seen Ghostbusters all the way through. These 80s films and Jurassic Park, which was 96, I think.
93.
Thank you. They're very slow comparatively. You watch a film now and it's much, you know, boom, boom. That was started with The Crow. The Crow was the first one that gave you that MTV generation. But they're quite slow and pacey. And, I mean, and Ghostbusters is quite rude as well. It was funny, though, was it? Because it's had a lot of... there's been a lot of backlash about it, Alan.
Well,
a lot of negativity on the trailer.
Yeah, it was even before it came out. It wasn't even a backlash, was it? It was a forelash. It was a preemptive strike.
Yeah, people don't know a good thing till they actually see the film itself.
Well, this is it. The trailer. I've not seen the trailer. I don't. You know, but apparently there was one edit that wasn't very good and one edit that was quite good. It's had the trailer's had 900,000 thumbs down on YouTube, which is a record. But it's weird, right? Because a lot of chauvinists are saying, oh, it's crap because it's women. Why have they done it with women? Oh, it's women, right? And a lot of feminists are going, hey, it's brilliant because it's women. It's brilliant because... Well, I don't believe either of you, I'm going to be honest. I couldn't care less if it's women or not. Is it funny? Is it funny?
It's got all the time on a Saturday Night Live.
It's got what?
No, because some of the actors in the film were on Saturday Night Live.
Okay, they do that, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the receptionist was actually 4.
What's he saying?
The receptionist was 4?
Yeah, from the Marvel films.
Thor. The receptionist was Thor.
Thor!
I thought you were thinking about a kid.
Yeah, I thought it was a toddler.
No.
Who's this texted in, right? Listen to this. Any of these actors bonkers? James Caan, yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
John Cassavetes. Yes, yes.
Never heard of him.
He was...
Rosemary's Baby.
No.
Yeah.
Wasn't he the brother of... wasn't he Fredo? Fredo in The Godfather. Has he got like a big bald thing and long hair?
It's that fella.
No. Oh, I don't know who that is then.
I got one.
Yeah, go on.
What about England?
No!
Freddy Krueger?
He was the cute alien in V, wasn't he?
Yeah, Willy.
Willy, that was it. He was called Willy!
No, he wasn't.
Of course he was called Willy. and look, someone here has texted in. I don't know what the text number is because I haven't got any of the details on my screen, but you can text in, guys. People are misunderstanding this completely. Danny John Jules, the cat from Red Dwarf.
Nah, he was cool, he was.
Although it says here he chased a dustman down the street with a machete.
Well...
Was that in real life or in the TV programme?
I don't remember a dustman in the TV programme.
I never liked Red Dwarf.
No.
I never really got it, and I upset... Oh, dear, you know, thank God Twitter wasn't around then. I got in so much trouble for saying I thought Red Dwarf was rubbish. Because the Red Dwarf fans take it really seriously. Oh, man, alive.
Yeah, because... If someone didn't like Red Dwarf, we could be branded as a smeghead.
Yep, that is...
That's it.
That is
the thing is, those men swapped girlfriends for Red Dwarf, so of course they're proprietorial.
Steve Horsley says, I just saw Ghostbusters. Awful, awful. And then he puts awful a third time, but he does it with capital letters, Alan.
Right. Well... Here's my challenge. Go and see the Peanuts movie and then tell me it's
flipping
awful.
Heck. I mean, that is slow. Well, it sounds like either your kettle is boiling up.
I'm doing some washing.
Oh, what are you washing? Your kegs?
I'm washing some shirts.
Beautiful. All right, Alan, we'll let you get on with that, shall we?
Hip, hip, hip.
Ta-ta. 0844 499 1000. No, straight to air after midnight, guys. That's gone. For the moment, although he's quiet on the calls tonight. And that's fine. It would be ideal if you called in, because I've got a blinding headache. And so the thought of constructing sentences is kind of worrying. If you don't want to, you don't have to. Do you want to go and put together that podcast? I've got a little bit of work. This slight phase thing is annoying me ever so slightly. Ever so slightly. 0844 499 1000 is the telephone number. If you want to give us a call, let me just turn the camera. Hello, Periscopers. So you can take part. What are we talking about? Bonkers actors? Film ring? Any suggestions for the next film ring would be gratefully appreciated. So the Daily Star... Now, this is never going to happen, right? This is never going to happen. Now that we can all say Cliff Richard again without whispering, the Daily Star is suggesting that Cliff Richard is going to go on I'm a Celebrity. Never going to happen. Never. They ask people like me to go on I'm a Celebrity. They ask me to go on there. You know, I get my position in the great scheme of things, guys. So Cliff Richard is being lined up for I'm a Celebrity. No, he's not. Of course he's not. That's never going to happen. The singer is being swamped with lucrative TV offers after being cleared over sex abuse allegations. And he can command a bumper paycheck. The summer holiday singer, I mean, come on, guys. Something a bit more relevant, more recent. Something like Carrie or something like that. The summer holiday singer had to fork out more than £1 million in legal costs in a successful bid to clear his name over the nightmare accusations. ITV are now rumoured to be very keen on bagging the 75-year-old at any price for I'm a Celebrity. Here's my prediction. He ain't never going to go on I'm a Celebrity. He's never going to do it. Never going to do it. Of course he's not. A source said, a.k.a. we made up a quote... Cliff is a national treasure with a massive fan base. He could walk his way through that show and be Jungle King. Always follow the bookies, and the bookies are king. Julie, stay there in a second. Bookies Ladbrokes yesterday slashed their odds on him going into the Australian jungle from 10 to 1 to 2 to 1. A spokesman said, no, they didn't. No person ever said this following sentence. It looks like ITV bosses could be singing congratulations to themselves if Sir Cliff signs up. He'll be TV gold and is sure to see ratings rocket. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. And I can see this one happening. Former UKIP leader Nigel Farage is also being chased for I'm a Celebrity. I can see him in the jungle, as long as it's been checked first. I can see him. I can definitely see him in the jungle, can't you? Being obnoxious, a little bit racist. Put him in the jungle with nobody that speaks English. That's what they should do. 0844 499 1000. Yes, Julie?
Hello. Did the newspaper also say it's not just the young ones who are going into the jungle, maybe?
No, they've only done one joke there, and I thought that would have been ripe. For exactly. For loads of jokes there.
Loads of punnage. Now, Ian, I'm finding up, number one, to apologise. You know I love Film Ring, and I watched The Imposter and loved it. And then my friend came over from Hong Kong, and she's only over for 3 days, so I had to see her. So I missed the interview with Charlie, because I was so desperate. I had a load of questions.
Oh.
And so I'm really sorry.
No.
But what I was going to say is that I kind of had a little investigate about the guy in question. I forgot what his name is, Bourdain.
Yeah.
And the more you read about him, the more crazy it is. There's a whole load of extra stuff that wasn't even covered in the documentary.
Yeah, go on.
Like, before he'd done it, he'd like taken on... something like 17 identities before he took on this guy?
They mentioned that in the film, I think, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was...
You weren't paying attention.
I wanted to say to Maybe this has already been mentioned. I shouldn't have called.
No, it's good you've called. Go on.
I wanted to say to Charlie that the FBI woman...
Yeah.
Who was kind of, she just took everything at face value. Yeah. And then all of a sudden was like, yeah, no, we knew there was something.
She was rubbish, wasn't she?
No, she was rubbish. And I kind of wanted to say, but you know what? She kind of, she changed the tune a bit sharpish. And really, I know what the caller earlier meant about not a satisfactory conclusion, but I don't really need there to be. I think it's quite evident what it was. But the boy himself, who was... the impostee, is that right?
Yeah.
He himself had got had a big history of things, and the mum, which he didn't mention in the documentary, she'd been a heroin addict whilst the boy was growing up, and they didn't mention any of that. And the 3 lie detector tests, she was taking drugs at that time, which would have affected it. So there was quite a lot of other things, which I think didn't. Not that it affected the film.
Drugs, drugs. The brother. Using drugs got mentioned, I think.
But I think afterwards, after he left, they said after he left, she kind of went down that road.
Right.
She was a habitual drug user way before that.
Yeah.
Not that it makes any difference. The boy was troubled, but there was a kind of a much more layers, I think, to it than we saw.
Yeah. I mean, with any, as I was saying this earlier on, with any documentary. You're getting the story through the literal and metaphorical lens of the director. And they are deciding what you see and what you don't see to fit the narrative that they've come up with.
Absolutely.
Which does mean, as well, that you should, and well done you for doing a little bit of extra research, you should question everything you see in a documentary because, you know, you think, oh, I'm getting all the facts. Well, you're not. You're getting the facts that the director has cherry-picked for you.
Well, it's the equivalent of saying about the article about Cliff Richards in the papers or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you only see a certain viewpoint that that the person writing it wants you to see. But I found it absolutely fascinating, and I found the guy himself, Bourdain, absolutely fascinating.
Have you spoken to him on Twitter?
No. Should I?
No. He's been I genuinely say this, you know, my tongue isn't in my cheek. I don't want people to go and kind of wind him up because it's not what it's about.
No.
But he has been, I haven't got an out time, by the way, he has been very, very abusive to a lot of the listeners. Proper.
I wanted to kind of know more about him.
Yeah.
Insofar as, you know, he's saying, you know, I stole their identity, I stole her identity. And then, oh, it's too late to go back. And, I mean, he's just like a fascinating in a, you know, macabre way. But also the fact that, you know, he's married with kids now.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, does somebody just turn that off? I don't know.
Well, go and look at his Twitter feed. Frank Parler, I think. F-R-A-N-C-A, maybe. Frank P-A-R-L-E-R. Go and look at his Twitter feed. And you'll see he's a very angry young man.
Yeah.
Very angry.
And I found it quite sad. I mean, there's obviously some kind of history of abuse for him. But I found it kind of sad. But also, I don't know. It was just, I thought that Charlie was magnificent in kind of sorting it out with the earlobes. Who just took it?
Yeah, I know. He was good, wasn't he? The Charlie Parker interview, the first, you know, 45 minutes of the show, that will be a podcast. That will be a special podcast. And then we'll do a separate podcast. I need to explain the podcast because loads of you don't know that we've changed things ever so slightly. I'll tell you after this. Talk radio. Okay, last hour of the show, no call straight to air. You call us up, you speak to Catherine, and she will call you back. Very, very simple. We can talk about anything you want. We can carry on talking about filming, the jungle, and I've got some more bits and pieces in the papers to go through. 0844 499 1000. I'm Ian Lee. This is Talk Radio.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I'm so glad that I got her to think of. She's fine as any Valentine. I think about her all the time. Cross my heart and hope to die. She sends me silly messages and pictures. Directing traffic in the mall or buzzing with some brand new shoes. She never fails to surprise. She makes me laugh. She makes me smile.
some Scrabble with the guys and wear our pink party hats. Maybe I should take her on safari. You'll see us wave from our canoe if that's what she wants to do. Tell me what's wrong with that. She makes me laugh.
Friday, we are having my friend from New York City, Fred Velez, coming on, who is, you think I'm a monkeys geek? You think I'm a geek? Man alive, you wait till you hear Fred chatting away about the monkeys. I don't know if this is possible. He is even more obsessed about them than I am. I mean, he's written a book about them as well, which is brilliant. But he's way more obsessed than I am. And I don't even know how that's possible. I don't know how you can fit any more... 08444991000, by the way. I don't know how you can fit any more obsession about those men in your life. Yeah, he does it. He manages to do it. He has squeezed it in. Anyway, he's going to come on and we're going to have a geek off for a bit. If that's all right, is that okay? You can indulge me in that. Thank you. And we are going to talk about the new Monkees Blu-ray set, which is hopefully winging its way to me. Although there have been a few complaints because the boxes inside have been knackered for quite a lot of people. And it's all kind of backfired a bit. But apart from that, it's supposed to be amazing. So we're going to get Fred on Friday. Last hour of the show. No, straight to air. We don't do that at the moment. 08444991000. I'll be honest with you. It's quiet on the phones. It is fine. You would choose the night that I have a blinding headache to abandon me. You're enjoying watching a sick man suffer, aren't you? Aren't you? Or listening to it, at the very least. That's fine. Hey, speaking of which, it's almost like I planned this link and I hadn't, but Sick Man Suffering, that matador that died. Wife sees bull kill matador husband. Horror, as Victor, 29, is gored in live TV fight. Now, loads of people have been saying, oh, he deserved it. I don't think he deserves it. No, he's a bloke, doesn't he? Yes, bullfighting is horrendous and barbaric and atrocious. You know, absolutely no need for it in the 21st century, or in any century, but it is just flipping... It's an awful, awful thing. But he didn't... you know, people who are celebrating his death, that's a little bit mean. Oh God! They've started off with a pun. Wow, a raging bull. Flipping heck! It's taken two people to write this story: Adam Aspinall and Emily Retter. Oh, by the way, if you want to call in with suggestions for guests, do. Don't at them if you're talking to me on Twitter about it, because I might not like them. But if you've got any suggestions for guests, I want to get some more guests on. We've got some good ones lined up. And 08444991000. A raging bull. Oh, this is Frank Evans' bloke, who's Britain's only matador in Spain. Oh, jeez. What a knob. I'm going to say it. He's a knob. You have a second to get it right, he says. Any loss of focus can be fatal. Well, when you say stuff like that, Maybe we get this Frank Evans on. Maybe we should try and hunt Frank Evans. When you say stuff like that, you kind of think, well, what a knob. A raging bull. This is a horrible story, by the way, guys. Plunges its horn into a Spanish matador's chest in a fatal attack that was watched by the victim's horrified wife. Victor Barrio, 29, was speared when a tricky manoeuvre went wrong and he died in hospital. The attack was broadcast live on Spanish TV. I mean, it's flipping. It's nasty. I mean, yes, I know that I think they kill about 6 bulls per session. So, you know, which is nasty as well. But, I mean, this silly sod didn't, you know, deserve to die. The bullfighter's wife, Raquel Sanz, 32, was too devastated to comment after the tragedy, but she later tweeted, "I have no words. My life has gone. I have no strength, although I have a lot of thanks." She also posted a poem by a Spanish poet, which ended with the words, "How I would love to believe..." Oh, flipping heck. Well, this doesn't help. This doesn't help anyone's cause. So this is the end of the poem. "How I would love to believe that there is glory for all those who lose their lives on the horns of bulls." Well, there isn't. I mean, to do it, to do it, you've got to be a massive knob, haven't you? Really? 0844-499-1000. I mean, you've got to be... It's just not nice, is it? It's just not nice. It's horrible. Britain's only bullfighter, Frank Evans, dubbed El Inglis, said, "It looks like Victor and the bull were both out of position, but it's all so quick, you only have a split second to get it right. If you are fit, all your senses should be working to..." It's not a fair fight, guys. If it was a fair fight, then it would be about 50-50 as to bulls and matadors dying, wouldn't it? If it was a fair fight, right, more matadors would die. Be about the same amount of matadors dying to bulls. "If you are fit, all your senses should be working," says this English matador, who looks like Harvey Keitel, actually. "And that should help you stop making mistakes, but any loss of focus can be fatal." The 74-year-old dad of two, originally from Salford, Greater Manchester, but now living in Marbella, added, "There's always a danger of being killed or gored, but you think it will happen to the next person, not you." But there's not always a danger. It doesn't happen. If it happened very often, we'd hear about it more often. It doesn't happen very often. They kill 6 bulls a session. Victor, a relative newcomer to the sport, was gored at a ring. Was gored in the ring. Fans gasped in horror as he rolled to the ground in a painful somersault after the 83-stone bull caught him. And you know what they did? They killed the bull! They killed the bloody bull! And it turns out the more often you say bull, the harder it is to say bull. 0844-499-1000. Before becoming a matador, Victor worked on a golf course. He once said, "I had always felt a great admiration for bullfighters and the festival." How could you feel admiration for those guys? It's, it's the same as kicking children. It's easy. It's easy to do. Yeah, you've got to be able to get out of the way if they kick back, but they won't kick back that much. You can kick a child harder than they can kick you. "But I was ashamed to say I wanted to be a bullfighter and a hero as I saw them." There's nothing heroic about it. He began his career as an apprentice at the Las Ventas Bullring in Madrid. Staff there were said to be... Now, who's talking now? Oh, this is Victor, the guy that died. Staff said staff there was said to be distressed and very moved at his death. Well, it is sad. It's, you know, it's sad he died. I'm not in any way suggesting that all bullfighters deserve to die. Here we go. Now, listen to this. Kaz Kari, why don't you call him? Raging Bull, because of the film Raging Bull. Kaz Kari says, surely that man's killed lots of bulls. I hope he died painfully. All lives matter, but he's a murderer, so why pity him more? Well, he's not. He's not. He's not a murderer. He killed bulls, right? Which is bad. I agree, it's stupid. But he's not a murderer, you know. He didn't deserve to die painfully at all. Call in, Kaz Kari. I'll be keen to discuss that in detail. Victor married Raquel in 2014. Less than a week before the tragedy, she posted a message advertising the fight. Raquel wrote, have you plans for next Saturday? Come here, their annual festival is famous. To cap it all, Victor Barrio is taking part. The last matador to die in a Spanish bullfight was Jose Cabrero in 1985. And two people were injured after being gored yesterday on the fourth day of the San Fermin running of the bulls. Well, that is, I mean, that is stupid as well. I mean, yeah, leave the bulls alone. Don't mess with the bulls. Sam, I'll come to you in a minute. 08444991000. But Kaz Kari, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. We don't want people like that to die painfully. That doesn't get anybody anywhere. 08444991000.
Unmissable late night radio with the original king of unconventional conversation.
Make contact with Ian Lee.
Late night Ian Lee on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Kaz Kari is furious. It's hard to have the conversation on Twitter. So I 08444991000. Kaz Kari has replied, sorry, mate, but life is life. The bulls didn't choose their job, but that man did. Minimally, he should accept his fate. Yeah, I just find it really hard to wish painful deaths on people. I do. And I'm not in any way defending bullfighting. I think it's cruel and barbaric and awful and totally out of step with what we as humans are capable of achieving. But I find it really, really difficult to wish a painful death on someone. I can't do it, I'm afraid. 08444991000. Yes, Sam.
Hello, you okay?
Yeah, good, thanks, Sam. What you got for us?
A couple of things. First thing is Pokemon Go. Are you into like sort of that sort of thing?
I don't like Pokemon. Now, Pokemon Go, though, is this, from what little I've heard, it's where you have to go out and meet people or something, isn't it?
Well, basically, I've got it on the iPhone because I do a shortcut to get it. It's out in the US and Australia, but not in the UK yet. But essentially, like, you go out and there's, like, Pokestops, which are basically, what? Like, little sort of...
There's what?
Pokestops are, like, places where you get Pokeballs.
Hang on a minute. Then... Stop putting Poke in front of words. just say the words. It's like, you Poke annoy me now. So there's stops or stocks?
Stops, as in stop sign.
Right, and bowls.
And then, I've got an accent, it's bowls, as in like a football.
Yeah.
Yeah, but basically, like, a Pokeball is, a bowl is what you throw at the Pokemon to get it, and then you have
what,
it.
But is it, but what, there are like Pokemon walking the streets?
Kind of, but they're not really walking the streets, they're more sort of like stationed in like random areas in your town.
Is it true that loads of kids have been turning up at these places and then getting duffed up?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Well, then my kids won't be playing that.
Well, if I advertise it to you, but it didn't really work, did it? It's like, kind of, no.
So what it is, you have to go to places. Your phone tells you where to go, does it? And then you get there and there's like a signal and you get like points or something. But loads of people are then loitering in these places and duffing people up.
Yeah, and getting mugged and stuff. But it isn't everywhere. It isn't like, you know... All in Cardiff and Moulton, like a really quiet town in Essex. But it's, you know, there's not a lot of street crime there.
Hang on a second. But someone is saying Pokemon Go is basically Grindr for geeks.
Oh. Right.
Dennis, can you call us again? We've muffed up your phone, so give us a call, Dennis, and we'll call you back.
The other thing I want to talk about is, I'm not sure if you've seen on Twitter, Gaza has been trending, and The Sun have... I'm not taking on the Sun Daily Mail. Or
The Sun, which is an excellent newspaper. All hail our Ubermaster, Rupert Murdoch. Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. But the whole kind of Paul Gascoigne, like, alcoholism thing, they're kind of having a go at him for being...
They won't be happy until they've hounded him to his boozy grave. That's what they want. They want him to die.
It's crazy, because, like, I mean, to some people, he's a national treasure, for some people, you know? And there's no need for them to sort of heckle him, like, in, well, on a national scale, on papers and stuff. There's much more, like, pressing things going on right now with the whole, well, EU thing and the Prime Minister thing, and it's like, you know, priorities, you know? I took media in sixth form. I didn't really do, like, print media kind of stuff. It was more like computers and videos and things. But we don't know a little bit about it, and I just think that, you know, if they're going to do a story about him...
Thing about Paul Gascoigne, right, from what little I know about him, right, he's an alcoholic, right? And alcoholism is a disease. It's a disease. You get the disease of alcoholism. Now, if they were... And the pictures... I've seen the pictures in the papers, and it's shameful. It's shameful that they've printed those pictures, right?
Oh, definitely.
It's him basically in a dressing gown. He's gone out to buy a shed load of booze, and his dressing gown's come open. He's got nothing on underneath, and he looks like he's dying, right? Because he is. He's dying. Alcoholism and drug addiction wants you to die. It wants you to kill yourself, right? And you will do eventually. And he will do eventually unless he stops. You wouldn't post pictures of someone with cancer, if it was cancer, or if it was they might do, I was going to say AIDS, but they might still do it with AIDS, actually. I remember the excitement when Charlie Sheen came out as being HIV. But cancer or whatever, it's the same disease, and people go, no, it's not, it's self-inflicted. It's not. It's not self-inflicted. Some people, right, when they pick up a drink or have a little toke on a joint or do a couple of lines of whatever, they can go, I enjoyed that. Right, I'm off to bed. Some people, when they pick up a drink or they pick up a drug or whatever, they can't put it back down. That's it. They can't stop. One is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And Gascoigne, from what little I know about, I don't know the bloke, he's got that disease. He can't have one drink, because if he has one drink, that will become 100 drinks, 1,000 drinks, and he won't be able to stop. And that's what's wrong with him. And shame on the newspapers that are making money out of a bloke that's dying in front of them.
I mean, I looked up the Sun's horrible outlook on mental health. Because, well, not mental health, like, you know, things that are inflicted by yourself, you know. But I'm not very good at explaining things. But I think it was Frank Bruno, I think, who had a mental episode.
Yeah.
And he was called Bonkers Bruno. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, like, yeah, that was the Sun. Bonkers Bruno, yeah, yeah.
I was thinking, like, that's ridiculous, because, I mean, I've, you know, as I mentioned before on the show, I've mentioned, you know, mental health and that sort of stuff. And it's terrifying. And no matter what, how famous you are or, you know, not famous you are, like, it's all, you know, playing field. No matter how famous you are, mental health is still terrifying. And if it's being plastered on tabloids that are popular, unfortunately they're popular, it's going to make not a mockery of it as such, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's a...
Yeah, well, the Bonkers Bruno thing, that was quite a few years ago, and I think the Sun have kind of, and this isn't me, you know, turning the company along because I don't have to yet, I think they've changed their tone a bit around stuff like that, but in terms of... Sam, thank you for that. In terms of the pictures of Gascoigne, they won't be happy until he's dead and it's heartbreaking, he's dying. He's killing himself. You know, he's committing suicide in the slowest, most painful, most humiliating way possible. Dennis! Oh, blimey. Dennis!
Hello, Ian.
Hello, Dennis. You're right, fella.
How are you this morning?
I've got a blinding headache, to be honest, Dan, and I'm struggling a bit. Only half an hour to go, then I can go home and go to bed. So I'm all right.
I picked the wrong time to slip up, because that bull was at its feistiest.
Yes.
They had damaged it too much, so it was lively. The picadors had not had a go at it, lancing it. Neither had he stuck those arrows in its shoulders, so it makes it put its head down in the end. The poor sod gives itself up at the end.
Yeah.
You know, he plays with it then, sticks those things in, as a sword behind the cape, so he's wrapped in it about it. The poor sod gives itself up in the end. It staggers to a halt, puts its head down, and he stabs it. You know, it was easy. He picked the wrong time to make a mistake when the bull was still feisty. Must have been at the beginning of the fight. It hadn't been damaged by then.
But it's, I mean, it's a horrible thing.
Of course it is.
To do. But I can't wish this man a painful death.
I can't do that. Don't say that. I don't say that. But he did pick the wrong time to do it.
Hey, Dennis.
So a lot of places, of course, have stopped doing it in Spain now.
Dennis, I've got a CD for you of me live in Luton.
Good.
Yes. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass you back to Catherine, and you're going to give her your address, and I will pop it in the post for you tomorrow.
That's very kind of you. And anyway, have a good time. Have a good time.
Maybe. I will have a good time. I will have a good time. Can you get Dennis's address? I'm not going to send him a CD. We're going to all go around his house one day and scare the bejesus out of him. Doran, thank you for this. I meant to mention this at the start of the show, and Catherine showed me this. There is a brilliant, brilliant clip of David Cameron. Can I get it to work on here? Here we go. David Cameron, right, coming out of 10 Downing Street and giving a press briefing and then walking off. And listen really carefully to what he does at the end. If I can get this to play. Here we go.
Thank you very much.
Now listen, listen. He's in walking back. He's walking back to 10 Downing Street. Listen. Listen.
Right.
He doesn't give a stuff! He doesn't care anymore! He literally doesn't care!
Thank you very much.
Turns around, walks back to 10 Downing Street.
Right.
He couldn't care less! He's finished! It's his summer holidays! Yeah, he's got one more. He's got 1.5 more days. Yeah. But he's on his summer holidays now. He's enjoying himself. I'm getting getting grief from animal rights people. If anyone knows what song David Cameron was singing there, do give us a call. Russ, stay there. Come to you after this.
Late Night Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Blimey, they're all coming out of the woodwork now. It's basic animal rights, Ian, from someone who's not following me and has just picked up on a tweet. Clearly, entertainment predicated on animal cruelty. Do bulls deserve a painful death? Ends. I don't know what that means. No, they don't deserve a painful death. They don't at all. I think it's awful, right? You do follow me now. Okay, I mean, you won't follow me then. Maybe you'll follow me. If you're listening, let me make it clear, right? I'm not in favour of bullfighting. I think it's horrible, right? I'm against animal cruelty. For God's sakes, I am in a book put together by the Cats Protection League about celebrities and their cats, guys. I went to the awards that the Cat Protection League were doing years ago, and they won't stop asking me, with Leslie Joseph and the girl that used to be on CBeebies, right? So don't talk to me about animal rights, guys, but I can't wish a painful death on someone, however cruel and barbaric that is, you know, and it's horrific. Bullfighting's horrific. Yeah, of course it should be outlawed. It's awful. I can't wish the fella a painful death. People are more important than animals. There we go. I've said it. People are more important than animals. They are. And even when I was a vegetarian and I thought that people are more important than animals. They are, aren't they? They are. 0844 499 1000. Yes, Russ.
Good evening.
I'm starting to warm up nicely now. Starting to warm up, and well, nice Alfred Hitchcock there. Well done.
Good evening.
A couple of things. I rang up to talk about the bullfighting, but I'd rather just make a quick point on that and actually I wanted to go on to something you were talking to your second from last caller about, about the addiction. First of all, that tune by the Monkees that you opened with at the start of the hour.
Yes.
I liked it from the start, but now it's really growing on me. I need to get the album.
Yeah, get the album, Good Times. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Good Times.
Good Times, yeah. It's absolutely brilliant.
Is it available in this country?
It's available in this country. You can you can download it. You can buy it on Amazon. You can get it anywhere you want.
I don't do downloads, man.
No, nor do I. I like to finger my music.
Yeah, the same with DVDs, mate. And because they've gone out of fashion, you can get DVDs and CDs for next to nothing.
Go into a sex shop. Go into a sex shop. And get the sex shop and get, you know, computer exchange. And you get DVDs 50p. They had the King of Comedy, Jerry Lewis and Robert De Niro, one of the great, Martin Scorsese, one of the greatest films of all times, right? One of the great, I remember when it first came out on VHS in 1995, and I paid 20 quid for it, 15 quid for it on VHS, right? 50 pence they had it for on DVD. 50 bloody pence. It's outrageous.
It's good. It's good, that place. My lad introduced me to CEX on. We go to the one on Aldi in Scarborough. Buy a few bits.
Oh, I go in there and get totally, totally lost in the DVD section. And the thing is, as well, the kids get lost as well. The kids look at all the Scooby Doo and all that stuff, and I'm like wilding away, going right. I'll have this. We'll have this. Beautiful. I'll have a little bit of this. Lovely. Thank you very much.
I've seen some DVDs for as little as 25p in there, like the really, really common, you know, ones that obviously when they first came out, a lot was sold. But, on a side point from that, I remember how expensive VHS cassettes were, originals, back
50,
in the day.
50 quid?
I remember my sister buying me The Lost Boys for Christmas when it came out, and it was like 10 quid, and that was in the late 80s.
Well, I remember when they first came out. They first came out in the sort of the mid 80s, about 80, early 80s, 83, 84. They were 50 quid a pop. I remember my dad getting the Jazz Singer, and it was 50 quid, and that was his present. That was his present, because that was everyone was skint then.
Yeah. I can believe that.
They were the days. Those were the days, Russell.
My uncle, he had a contact, I don't know, someone he knew he worked with.
Yeah.
And he used to get original... I mean, this was back in the 80s, so it was a big thing. He used to get original VHS films off... it must have been some company that cleared, you know, that sold off ex-rental VHSs, and he had a wall full of them. And it touches on what we were talking about the other night. He got a couple of films that I wanted to watch. I don't know, I must have only been about 11.
Yeah.
One was Porky's.
Oh, flipping. That's a bit. That's got lots of boobies in it, hasn't it? Porky's. Naughty.
Oh, yes. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, flipping. How old were you when you watched the Chainsaw Massacre?
I was about 10 or 11 when what it was. He wouldn't let me borrow Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Good.
And obviously, I'd be too embarrassed to ask to borrow Porky's. So what I did was, when he weren't looking, I swapped the videos around into different sleeves. I said, oh, can I borrow these, Uncle Peter?
Beautiful. Chainsaw Massacre is I love that film. I need to watch it. I've not seen it for a while. It's one of my favourite films. It's brilliant. It is brilliant. Here we go. Hang on a minute, right? Let me just read this, right? I'm getting tweets from people now. Now they're waking up. People think people are more important than animals. Animals wouldn't agree, I'm sure, says someone. So I've replied, why don't you ask them and let me know what they say? Animals aren't sentient in that same way. Listen, I was a vegetarian for 26 years. I was strongly against, you know, vivisection and all of that kind of stuff. But even then, humans are more important than animals. You know, that kind of strikes me as obvious, really.
Well, I would agree with you on that, Ian. I mean, my wife's a vegan and animal rights activist, so I've been sort of educated on a lot of things that I probably wouldn't have took a lot of notice of in the past. But what I would say is, and I know you'll agree with this, is we as humans, we are superior species, and in a way, it's hard to sort of quantify why this is the case, but we are in a way, we are more important. We're top of the food chain, but we have an utmost responsibility as being a superior species to take care of them and not hurt them. And on this bullfighting thing, right? I agree. I couldn't say that he deserves to die, but I would say, and this is my view on it, that it serves him right that he did die, because now he knew what he was getting into. He knew how dangerous he was.
You're putting the bull's life above his.
No, but no, right. If you stand on the top of a skyscraper with no harness. Right. And you're drunk, and you're putting yourself in a dangerous situation.
Yeah, but bullfighting.
You're right.
But you can't say a bloke gored to death on live TV serves him right, because bullfighting is rigged, right?
No, but it's abusing and bullying and tormenting an animal. Nothing more, nothing less. Not serving a purpose.
Well, it's entertainment.
Food.
It's entertainment. Exactly. Yeah. So it is serving. It is
abusing an animal for entertainment.
No, you don't. But a significant portion of the Spanish population does. So it is serving a purpose. It's entertainment.
Well, that's not an argument. It's serving.
Well, hang on. You've just said no, but it does. It is, Russ, because you've just said it's not serving a purpose. Well, that's incorrect. It is serving a purpose. Whether you agree with that purpose or not.
That's semantics. By the way.
Well, no, it's not. It's facts, mate. It's facts. Damn me bringing facts into an argument.
Well, you can't say that it doesn't serve him right for the fact that
he's
put himself in a position where there's a probability, a possibility, that he could die a painful death. That's his fault. He's put himself in that position.
And
when he's put himself in a position where he's going to torment an animal and abuse an animal for the fun and the entertainment, and then it so happens that the animal kills him, I don't have any sympathy. I don't say he deserves it to die, but I don't have any sympathy with the fact that he has died.
Did Steve Irwin deserve to die?
No, I didn't. I said this bloke doesn't deserve to die. Steve Irwin... It's not in the same.
Yes, it is.
The same.
Yes, it is.
Well, he wasn't even
bullying an animal. He was just
exactly. He wasn't abusing the animal, was he? Yet some people would say that.
But it was for entertainment. Russ, calm down.
He wasn't.
What's going into you today? You've got all uppity. What's going into
you? You get uppity sometimes, far more than I just have.
You're making a passionate point, and it's wrong. Calm down.
Well, no, but you're telling me I'm wrong. That's what I'm getting. And I can see it's not wrong.
Well, no. The
comparison with Steve Irwin is not a comparison.
Well, no, because Steve Irwin died because he was dicking about with animals.
Yeah, but he wasn't tormenting it and abusing it.
So so you feel bad that Steve Irwin died?
I don't feel bad that Steve Irwin died.
You don't feel bad about Steve Irwin dying? Why not? He was doing an educational programme. He was educating, and yet you don't feel bad about him dying?
Well, he went, no, it's not that I don't feel bad about him dying.
Russ, you just said, I don't feel bad about Steve Irwin dying.
Don't try and twist my words.
I'm not twisting your words. I'm quoting your words. Hang on a minute, Russ.
And you're talking over the top and not letting me make my point.
Russ, I'm not twisting your words. I'm quoting your words back to you. I don't feel bad about Steve Irwin dying.
Let me speak and let me explain.
Explain
right?
You saying I don't feel bad about Steve Irwin dying.
Steve Irwin, right? Do you feel bad about Steve Irwin dying, yes or no? It was sad that he died, right? But he knew the dangers of messing around with a stingray.
It was serving a purpose. It was educational. He was educating us. So you don't feel bad about Steve Irwin dying. You don't feel bad about Victor Barrio dying. I didn't realise you were cold.
Steve, I've just already said at the beginning, to me, the comparison is not there between Steve Irwin.
I'm not comparing them.
You're the one who raised Steve Irwin.
I'm just bringing it.
You
know, I did. I'm bringing him into the conversation.
I don't think there's a need to because there's no comparison.
Well, I'm not. You don't have to have a comparison, Russ. I'm just bringing him into the conversation.
I don't see the relevance of bringing Steve Irwin into it.
Well, it's another person that died.
But he wasn't. The point is, he wasn't abusing and tormenting an animal.
But you don't feel bad about him dying.
I haven't really got an opinion on whether.
Hang on a minute. You've gone from saying you don't feel bad about him dying to now saying you haven't got an opinion. quite cold,
I felt,
Russ.
All right, I felt bad at the time. It was sad that he died.
So you do okay. Feel bad that he died.
Yeah. When did you?
Well, some people would say that he was tormenting the animals. Did you ever see him with a crocodile?
No, he was. I'm on about the
it
point
could
where
be argued that
stingray.
Yeah,
he was interfering with an animal.
Yeah, he was interfering with. I think it was. Yeah. Is it a manta ray? I think he was interfering with it in its natural habitat. He was interfering with it.
Yes, yeah, so he knew what to expect.
So he deserved to die.
No, I didn't.
So you don't feel bad again.
The bullfighter didn't deserve to die. But the bullfighter, I have no sympathy for the fact that he
okay,
died.
But the stingray,
that's his problem.
The ray obviously felt threatened by Steve Irwin. Who yeah. did used to wind up animals?
Well, he interfered with them in the natural habitat.
So you don't feel any sympathy with him?
No, I didn't say that.
You did say that. You did say that about 5 minutes ago. So you don't. I'm just trying to ask that because you keep flipping and. No, Russ. Everybody heard you say it about Steve Irwin.
Everybody can listen to the podcast, Ian, so they can listen to what I said.
You
and they
said.
Can also listen to the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, Russ.
You're trying to twist it around.
No, Russ. I'm not. I'm quoting back at you. You said about Steve Irwin, you don't feel any sympathy for him, and then you've just remembered that you did actually feel a bit.
I didn't say that about Steve Irwin.
Yes,
you said I didn't feel sympathy for him.
Russ. Yes,
no,
you
I
did.
Said. Listen, he, at the end of the day, it was on a different scale. He wasn't wanting to hurt the animal, but there are some that would say that he was interfering with it in its natural habitat. So what I would say to that on the Steve Irwin one is that. He knew what he was doing, and there was a risk, so that's unfortunate, you know, that an animal turned around and stung him or spiked him in the chest. That's the risk he took.
Unfortunate? Are you going to tell that to his kids, his little girl? It was unfortunate your dad died trying to educate the world about these beautiful animals that we would otherwise never get to see. But it was unfortunate.
You don't need to be wrestling a crocodile or interfering with animals in their natural habitat. When I say interfering,
he was
the messing with them to educate the public.
Well, but he was educating us.
David Attenborough has never harassed and tormented or interfered with animals in that way to bring us the education that he did over the last years.
And I've always found David Attenborough's programmes to be very, very dry. But Steve Irwin, there was something exciting about the way that he brought, you know, the natural world to life.
Well, that's your opinion, isn't it? Yeah. That's okay.
So Victor Barrio deserved to die, and Steve Irwin deserved to die.
No, that's kind of cold, Russ. No. Anyway, everybody can listen back to the podcast and hear what I said. I did not deserve to die. Russ, quite clearly, he did not deserve to die. But I have no sympathy with the fact that he did die.
Steve Irwin.
I'm talking about the bullfighter.
Okay, because you did say that about Steve Irwin.
An animal, and he died, and that's tough.
You did say that about Steve Irwin.
No, I didn't.
That you didn't have any sympathy for him.
Well, all I can say is whoever wants to listen back to the podcast.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Russ. Can you stick around? Because we'll go to the ads and we'll get that clip off.
Fine.
All right, brilliant. Russ, stay there. Well, let's have some ads and we'll get that clip.
Late night, Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
I don't feel bad that Steve Irwin died.
Right, there we go. Well, Russ, it's just you saying it.
So I thought you'd gone to find a clip where I said Steve Irwin deserved.
No.
You just said before the ads.
Right, can we find the clip? Jeez.
Can we find the clip of me just before the adverts?
Can we find the clip of me just before the adverts to ask where I'm asking what we were looking for? Can we find that clip, please? And send that. So the bit with me going towards the ads, because I know you didn't say that he deserved it. I'm talking about.
Well, that's what you just said.
The question was, do you feel bad?
No, the question wasn't, do I feel bad? The question you just said to me before the adverts was,
okay.
Do you accuse me of saying, I quote, that I said Steve Irwin deserved to die. And that was just before the ads. And I refuted that and denied that. And you says, okay, we'll find the clip. Are you okay to hold on? Which I've just held on, and you've come up with a clip where I said that I didn't feel bad that Steve Irwin died.
Hang on a minute. Well, we're trying to find the clip. What did I say on the clip? Someone talk to me. Someone talk to me, please. It's exciting, isn't it, Russ?
I just think it's ridiculous.
About Steve Irwin dying.
Right, so what did I say in the clip?
I can't hear you now.
What did... Oh, for goodness sakes. Just send me the clip. 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 Don't come in. Just send me the clip. Send me the clip. Send me the clip. We're still friends, aren't we, Russ?
I hope so.
It's a healthy
disagreeing
conversation.
On a subject. I just take umbrage to being accused of saying something or
but I didn't say, well, I take umbrage. I take umbrage at it as well, Russ, which is why I'm finding the clip, because I didn't say that.
You did, before the advert. You accused me of saying that Steve Irwin deserved to die.
No, I didn't. I didn't accuse you of that.
You did.
All right, well, let's find out.
Because if you'd accused me of saying that I didn't feel bad, I would. Yeah, I did say that at the beginning of the conversation, but I did not say he deserved to die. And that's
no, I know you didn't say that. I'm not accusing you of that. We're waiting for the clip to come through. Have you sent it through? Okay, let's refresh my email. All right. Here we go. Right, let's find out. Here we go. Have a listen.
No, I didn't.
That you didn't have any sympathy for him.
Well, all I can say...
Russ, shut up. I'm playing it. Listen, I'm playing it. Shush, 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 shush. This is the clip.
No, I didn't.
Oh, hang on. Is that you? Is that a recording or is that you saying that?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't have any sympathy for him.
Well, all I can say is whoever wants to listen back to the podcast.
I'll tell you what we'll do, Russ. Can you stick around? Because we'll go to the ads and we'll get that clip off. That's what I said. And it's talking about sympathy, Russ. I'm not mentioning at all... That you were... Here we go.
No, I didn't.
That you didn't have any sympathy for him.
Well, all I can say is whoever wants to listen back to the podcast...
I'll tell you what we'll do, Russ. Can you stick around? Because we'll go to the ads and we'll get that clip off.
Bit.
There we go.
It was prior to the sympathy bit. It was leading up to that.
No, it wasn't, Russ. Listen to it back. Because that's not what I said.
I'll listen back to the podcast myself.
And I look forward to receiving your apology.
I've got nothing to apologise for. You've just accused me of saying things
that I haven't said. And I've just played you the clip...
Trying to make me feel bad about having my opinion.
Yeah, no, Russ, Russ.
I don't give a toss whether you agree with it or not. That's my opinion.
Russ, why are you getting so upset? You've accused me of...
Because I don't like the fact that someone abuses an animal, spikes it, torments it...
But Russ,
and then it gores them...
Russ,
Russ, you're trying to make excuses for the matador.
I guess I'm a little bit more humane than you because I don't wish.
Whatever. I don't wish
a painful death on anybody.
Did I say that? Did I say?
Well, you just said you just
death.
Said Russ, calm down. You just said you don't
I'm
give
calm,
a.
Mate, I'm
no,
calm.
You're not, Russ.
I'm
you're
calm.
Not. You're not.
You're the one who's getting worked up.
You just said you don't give a stuff about the matador. I do.
That's different. God almighty, you just...
Well, Russ, you keep accusing me of saying things that I've not said. You said you don't feel sympathy for Steve Irwin. Then you said you actually remembered that you did. And now you're accusing me of painting you out to be...
Again about...
No, I'm not, Russ. I'm quoting you.
No, you're not quoting me. All I can say is I'd like listeners to listen to the podcast, if this is on a podcast, word for word of what I've said and what you said, because you just twisted it around again.
No, I'm not at all.
Listen to the podcast yourself, Ian.
I don't. Well, I won't, because I don't listen to my own podcast. I'm not like that. But when you listen, Russ, I really hope you do listen properly and you hear what you've said, because you're all over the shop tonight, man. I don't know what's going on, but you're all over the shop.
No, I'm not. I've got my opinions and I'll stick by my opinions. Okay.
Well, I do care for the matador. I do. I care for all human beings.
I don't.
Well, there you go. That's your opinion and that's quite cold. I do care for the matador.
If you think it's cold.
No, I don't care if you don't care that I think it's cold. I don't care, you know, that your opinion and you're putting yours, and every time I challenge it, you get very upset. But whenever you challenge my opinion, I'm not getting upset.
So it's cold. It's cold to care about animal welfare.
Well, Russ, that's my opinion. It, no, no, I'm not saying... No, yeah, you're putting words into my mouth. I don't think it's...
That's effectively what you're calling me, cold.
Yes,
I
think...
About
no,
welfare.
That's no... I'm not calling you cold for that, Russ. I'm calling you... I think it's cold not to care for a man dying. I think that's cold, yeah.
Your argument's flawed, mate.
Where's the flaw? I'd like you to... Where's the flaw?
Because he is abused and tormented an animal.
Yeah.
And, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And the animal has bitten back.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The animal was more than entitled to have a go back and basically do what it did, which in effect caused his death. That's not the animal's fault, is it?
Yeah.
And he knew the dangers before he went in that
Russ,
ring.
But Russ...
He decided to torment an animal for the entertainment value.
God, you and Macintosh is joining in with the worst analogy ever. You and Macintosh... If a rapist victim ripped his dick off and he bled to death, you wouldn't get too upset about it. Oh, yeah, geez, what's that got to do with anything? I thought my Steve Irwin analogy was stretched a little bit, blimey. But your opinion is that, Russ. And my opinion is I think that's cold. And that's fine.
Why does that make me cold?
But that's my opinion, Russ. And you've given your opinion, and yet I'm not allowed to give my opinion.
No, you're allowed to give your opinion.
Right, fine.
I just wish you'd been a bit more civil about the debate instead of trying to make me out to be some kind of cold swine.
No, Russ. My opinion is that is cold.
I'm a cold swine.
I've not used the word swine. Why have you brought the word swine into it?
Well,
you're extrapolating.
I'm using the word swine.
Yeah, well,
that's
but
how it feels.
Well,
you're calling me far worse than that.
No, Russ.
You're calling me everything under the sun.
But Russ, I'm literally not calling you everything under the sun. All I've said was that's cold, and somehow you've brought the word
swine.
How
can I be accused of being cold?
Russ.
When I'm the one in the argument who seems to care about the animal's welfare.
Russ, that's my opinion. And I'm entitled to it, like you're entitled to yours.
But your opinion's flawed, Ian.
But you've not pointed out the flaw.
It is flawed, of course it is.
Well, could you tell me the flaw?
Accounting for the welfare of the animal.
I said that I think...
In our conversation...
I've said that I think bullfighting is abhorrent. I think it should be banned immediately. I think it's awful.
Yeah, you did say that earlier.
Yeah, I said that.
But I also think
to not care about a man dying a painful death in front of his wife... I think that's cold, and that's my opinion. I'm allowed to have that, like you're allowed to have yours.
Of course you can talk to your people.
Brilliant.
Obviously, it's a free world, free country, should I say. Oh, well. Is your headache gone yet, Ian?
Yeah, it has done, mate. You've done me the world of good. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that. Do you enjoy that? We're still friends.
Yeah.
It was good, that, wasn't it? Of course we're friends. Don't go off all funny on Twitter and Facebook.
No, I don't. I'm not like that, mate.
Well, you have been like that the last couple of weeks. Russ, come on, now you are being obtuse. By saying that was a bad call, that was a boring call, I'm never going to call in again.
That was me, though. Well, that wasn't slagging you or the show.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. I didn't say you were slagging the show off. You need to calm down.
It's you.
What I'm saying is, don't go funny again.
I won't go funny again. It's nice to chew the fat and have a debate.
Isn't it,
Even if you are wrong at the end of it.
Russ, you're a good lad.
To your opinion.
Speak to you later in the week. Take care, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Ta-ta. Oh, there we go. Enjoyed that. And that's how it should be. You have a good old argument, and at the end of it, you shake hands and say, well, that was good. I enjoyed that. Russ, thank you. I hope you enjoyed it as well. I hope you get a good night's sleep. Right, that's it. We're back tomorrow at 10, or tonight at 10. Till then, ta-ta.
Talk Radio.
We've got entertainment, and we're not afraid to use it. Talk Radio.